Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM, wherever you tuned in from. Thank you for tuning into Eagle FM this time of the day, especially, well, if you just, strategically timed the beginning of Home Run because you know, your drive time show, your favorite duo here on Eagle FM. An extra thank you to you. And other than that, wherever you find yourself, whether at home or work or driving, hence Drive Time Show, thank you for tuning in. As usual, we are here with yet another one.
Yeah, why can't you guys just leave DJ Khaled's favorite tagline alone?
Well, it's a repetition, man. I think he's repeated it in a lot of his songs and other people's songs.
It's his tagline.
It is. I'm sort of, well, like, stuck in my head.
A tagline. It's a tagline. I know.
Rosina Bonstana.
What? What are you saying in Russian?
No, that's Rick Ross. Rosina Bonstana. I can blow money.
He says it in French?
No, it's English.
No, Rosé, what?
Rosé. Huh? Rose. Huh? It just, I think modified it to, to make it sound like rosé, aka,
the
just
wine,
Rosé,
what?
Rosé.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the rest of the sentence?
He was, born Stana, whatever Stana mean. Like, I think it's Sturna.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's not a curse word. No.
No. No.
I can blow money. '50s when I'm shopping. But anyway, look, the thing is, every time that I listen to, how to put this, I like to listen to Rick Ross songs because every time I listen to them, they, I feel rich. It must be the lyrics.
I feel rich.
Must be the lyrics.
I'm gonna say that again.
I feel rich every time I listen to Rick Ross music.
No, man.
Wait, so it's just me?
No. No, dude.
Right. So let's talk civil society.
Yeah.
Yeah, so civil society or NGO. But one thing I like about, hang on a second. I only learned about FITI today. I knew about EITI. I did not know about FITI.
Well, it seems like these are like systems and things that fly underneath the radar.
Yeah, because look at this. EITI, that's the Extractive Industry Transparency Initiative. Yeah, now, the FITI is also a transparency initiative, but that one is strictly for, it's basically for the fishing industry, hence the F in the beginning for, a fishing industry transparency initiative. Hang on a second.
Although EITI is like over-encompassing.
Yeah, extractive. Yeah, I think it can easily be compared to the International Energy Agency and the International Atomic Energy Agency. Mm. Yeah, they are both into the realm of energy, but one is broad. That's your energy agency, International Energy Agency. But the International Atomic Energy Agency just zone in one source of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And obviously with fisheries, I think Namibia is already like the template of what not to do.
It has not, it hasn't gotten better. Where do you think where do you think I learned about, I learned about FITI for the first time?
Mm.
The IPPR a blog of one of these last month. They were talking about a high level engagement with the fishing industry that the president and the vice president held in Walvis Bay, which happened to be about the fishing sector, where they were meeting with the high level officials who coming from both public and private sector. Then they made it a closed door meeting. And now, it's like, you know what, for an industry that's trying to do, you know, damage control in terms of reputation and access to information within that particular industry, holding indoor meeting, I think it's a little too early for you guys to be holding indoor meeting.
No, Helmut, it's literally
Little too early.
It's literally like the same thing in terms of understanding what's going on every time when there's a SADC head of state summit situation happening. For example, like when it happens here in Namibia.
Yeah.
Actually, let me be more specific. When Tshisekedi was here 2024, we were asking the question between ourselves, because I read the invite and the accreditation form, because they have a little brief there explaining to you what's happening.
Yeah.
Nowhere did it say it's because of East DRC. And East DRC was not on the radar of any news, not our news program, international news for that matter. And we didn't know why were these heads of state here.
Yeah.
Specific, was it at Avani that they were at? Yeah, at Avani, the hotel itself. Why were all these heads of state here? And it sounded like it was just a run of the mill.
Yeah.
Heads of state discussion. Hanakam, by the end of that year, 2024, East DRC is once again...
Is up in flames.
Up in flames, and then the fighting began. And then it was, and then we only heard, then we actually heard of the Luanda agreement where
Lorenzo
brought them together most in Luanda.
He's the one that was heading SADC at the time.
Yeah, because he brought them together in Luanda, where they said yes to things and then they didn't implement anything on the ground. Yeah. And then it spilled over into 2025. And then we had to be asking questions. Now, what's actually going on here? Why are these guys not settling their differences?
Yeah.
So at the heart of this discussion, Hamoud, don't be surprised if you don't hear of one thing. Because in actuality, it's a scenario of... Well, we just spoke about the word, the explainer of propaganda just now with our colleague Francina from production.
Yeah.
And even though propaganda tries to influence the audience for one specific direction, in many ways, propaganda also tries to divert the attention of the audience to focus on another talking point.
So it's a diversion from the main activity that's more important than what's being cooked up or what's being blown into the faces of the general public.
Yeah. For example, it could be like, let's say it's like the oil and gas in Namibia.
Yeah.
That you and I, because you and I read the report says 10 years from now.
Industry.
Now every time when I go to an oil and gas event, I ask people here on the side note of things, why are people so hyped up for oil and gas? Where does this discussion, the promise of oil potentially before 2030, where is this coming from? There's a report that literally says, at best case scenario, 2034. Best case scenario, 2034. Where is this hype coming from? Who's making noise about the hype? And who's hyping things up?
You know, when it comes to things like that, I took the advice of Robin Sherman, and he's the guy to Namibian economy, and he's, when he explained that in this type of industries, whether the information is coming from a bunch of corporate guys or just your public officials, you have to take. You have to take both the information irrespective of where it's coming from. You have to take that information with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
If not a whole wheelbarrow. Because,
I'd actually give the whole mining sector to, the whole salt mining to it just like that.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, there's some kind of, a lot of, PR advantage that comes with announcements like that. For either the corporate world or the political world. Now, the political world is more on the side of public clout and making either that department, that ministry of that a political party representative, whatever is being announced.
Yeah.
They like to put a good, you know, it gives them that a good reputation, which is a good thing if you look at it, you know, from a PR standpoint. But, if it's coming from a corporate world, it's the exact same thing. What you are looking at is just someone putting a good name there for their institution, and that also cascades into more like translates into a good name for their company on the stock exchange, and the value of their shares goes through the roof. So, but before we continue, let's take a short interview.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa eva tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite okoye ekukurile oshafa fana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora etatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today.
And coming back to listeners there from the, if we can say from the extended break right there. And as promised, we quickly cross over to an informative interview that we're having with a host. With a guest from Velvet University, that being Madam Crystal Nassau. Crystal, welcome. Thank you for joining us, and good afternoon.
Well, good afternoon, Dwight, and to all the listeners out there.
Yes, yes. Crystal, obviously there's some good news that you're going to share with the listeners in a short while. And just to give a little bit of a background, this will be about the 9th graduation ceremony and the nursing oath taking. Crystal, if we start off from the bat, specifically with up the first particular the talking point, could you briefly tell the viewers what Velvet University is celebrating this particular week?
Well, thank you so much, Dwight. We are so excited to share with everyone that Velvet University will celebrate its 9th graduation ceremony as well as its oath-taking. Now, this is also our 3rd graduation since becoming a university in 2024. Now, the graduation and oath-taking dates are as follows. The 15th of July, we will host the nursing students who will take their professional oath under the theme Call to Care Bound by Professional Ethics. And this, of course, will take place at the Gateway Conference Center. And then on the 16th and the 17th of July, 2026, of course, we will be graduating a total of 1,016 graduates from respective fields under the theme From Knowledge to Impact, Shaping the Future. And this will take place at the McCure Hotel on the 16th and the 17th of July.
And that sounds obviously as a super important date for these graduates, but it actually also gives us the opportunity of looking at the next particular talking point, Crystal, about what are the most important highlights for the viewers and potentially also the visitors, that could be family and the likes, that should know mm-hmm. about this year's graduation.
Well, of course, this year, like I just mentioned, we will be graduating as a highlight 1,016 students that will be graduating respectively on the 16th and the 17th of July. And the significant presence of our health sector cohort is about 907 nurses that will take the pledge, the nurses' oath that they will take on the 15th of July. Now, we are also showcasing the university's academic expansion, where we will also give out some applications and also some flyers for our 2027 applications that is currently open. It opened up on the 1st of July, 2026, and it includes approximately 14 new programs within our new faculty of law, commerce, and also education. So this ceremony will also see postgraduate awards in higher education, business administration, occupational health and safety, and also community health nursing. And this is commendable, especially because this is our third graduation as being a university.
And this, and then it obviously talking about the themes itself, Crystal, what does the theme from knowledge to impact mean for Velvita University and its graduates?
Well, thank you so much for asking this question. We searched long and hard for this theme, and the theme really reflects our commitment to turning academic learning into tangible social and also economic benefits. Now, we prepare our graduates with skill, ethical grounding, and also an entrepreneurial mindset so that they can lead change in their respective workplaces after graduation and also communities in which they impart and across Namibia and also the world, because our graduates are world-class graduates.
And I hope that they also realize in terms of the skill sets that they've obviously been working hard to achieve, that they also carry that same banner going ahead into the professional field. But then about the nursing oath itself, Crystal, the nursing oath itself is a very poignant moment specifically for many of these skilled Namibians that will now enter the sector mm-hmm. as professionals. What message do you want the public to hear about the nursing graduates?
Well, you are absolutely correct. The nursing oath marks our graduates' formal commitment to patient care, professionalism, and also ethical practice. Now, we are proud that 907 of our nursing students will pledge to uphold the highest standards, and that commitment also strengthens health services in our communities, and also it reassures the public of quality. And they will do so under the theme Call to Care and Committed to Professional Ethics.
And then heading into the next talking point, Crystal, could you also confirm for us the role of partners and media specifically in the ceremony?
Well, this afternoon we actually received two of our final sponsors and partners for this graduation, but we have a group of different partners that are partnering with us for this ninth graduation, and they are specifically Apgar Maternity Hospital as well as Lady Pohamba Private Hospital. Now, both these two hospitals are also taking in some of our students for their practicals, and therefore we have a long-standing relationship with them, and they have decided to expand that relationship into sponsoring our graduation respectively with trophies as well as other types of sponsorship. We also have Aqua City that came in there sponsoring us with some water, so that we don't go thirsty throughout the 3 days. And then also we have Sheepy FM that will actually be our official media partner, and they will broadcast all the highlights across the 3 days, helping us share these milestone moments. Now, today, this afternoon, we also received a significant amount of money sponsored by the Imani Foundation, and they are also a long-term partner of us. We have a long-term relationship with them through our students, and this is not the first time that they have sponsored us. for our graduation, and they continue to sponsor us with our graduation. Now, also this afternoon, we received yet another confirmation from KM Marketing, and they also came on board. Now, KM Marketing is also responsible for most of our promotional material that we'll be showcasing during the graduation and oath-taking ceremonies, and they are then our official sponsors throughout the graduation. And then also we have Studio 7 Advertising, and they are our official photographer of the day, making sure our students, our graduates' precious milestone moments are captured in class, in style, and at an affordable rate. So those are our sponsors thus far. We also have Filtrex Fashions, and they also came on board with a sponsorship. And this is also a long-term partnership that we have with them. Filtrex Fashions are responsible for assisting us and our students with nursing gear and nursing uniforms. And they then also came on board to say, you know what, we want to take this a little bit further and give a cash donation towards the graduation.
And that all, and I hope that the students themselves will appreciate all these particular inputs and insights and investments, obviously, through these partnerships that Velviche University has garnered for them.
Yes.
Crystal, if we get into the next talking point, that obviously being, around the event itself, on the day of the event itself, that there's going to be obviously mention of traffic disruption around the venue, that being Mercury Hotel. What should the residents and the motorists expect on the particular, over the course of the particular events of the graduation?
Well, this is, of course, a very, very important aspect towards graduation. As we respect all stakeholders and also all businesses within the surrounding area. And we would just like to use this opportunity to inform the public and also the stakeholders that we do expect an increased traffic on especially the airport road and the surrounding areas on the 16th and the 17th of July 2026, when the graduation will take place during these 2 days. Now, despite that, we also do want to alert the public on possible traffic interruptions on the 15th of July 2026 on the Gateway Conference Center Road in Commerzdal. And we apologize for any inconvenience, and also we urge the public to plan alternative roads on these days, 15th July during the oath-taking. That will be at the Gateway Conference Center, and then the 16th and 17th of July, and that will be at the McCure Hotel. Now, to also speak on the traffic, we will also have the City of Windhoek traffic officers that will help regulate the traffic, especially on the 16th and the 17th of July during the busy seasons in the morning when students are being dropped off and also once we close. So we would just like to inform them that our starting time on the 16th and the 17th will start. We will start expecting students and guests and parents. Guardians will start arriving as of from 6 o'clock in the morning, and we do anticipate to finish by 12 o'clock. If not, we would probably still expect some busy street by 1 o'clock in the afternoon on both days, the 16th and the 17th. That would be for the graduation at the McCure Hotel, and then also on the 15th of July during the oath-taking ceremony that will take place at the Gateway Conference Center. Now, the Gateway Conference Center will be busy throughout from about 7 o'clock in the morning until 5 in the afternoon, because we start in the morning at 7, and we will have two sessions, and the first session will end at 12, and the next one will start at 2. So you can expect a busy, busy day throughout.
100%. And then finally, Crystal, if we look ahead towards the 2027 intake discussion, looking ahead, what does the university also hope to achieve with the new programs and the incoming 2027 intake?
Well, our Faculty of Law, Commerce and Education has been established fully last year. And this faculty has expanded its scope, and it now includes about 14 different programs across the three schools, which is the School of Law, Commerce and Education, but specifically for the Commerce School of Law, School of Commerce, and also School of Education. Now, we aim to broaden access to professional qualifications and strengthen capacity in critical sectors. And our goal is to produce graduates who are job ready and who are ethically grounded and also able to contribute towards national development agendas. And we invite prospective students to apply and join us in shaping the future of the nation. Now, I would just want to highlight some of the new programs that we have, and they include certificates and certificates, diplomas, bachelor honors, postgraduate diplomas, as well as master's degree programs. And various programs are marketing and communication, ICT, bachelor of science in ICT. We also have programs in human resources, or rather human capital, and then also we have a new program such for in quality assurance. Mm. So a different array of programs that students can actually apply for. And to apply for these programs, they just log on to our website, which is www.wu.edu.na.
100%. Crystal, just before we end our talk, if there's still something that you wanted to add, you can still do so.
Well, at this point in time, we just want to say thank you to the Eagle FM and also its listeners and the public for taking note of our 9th graduation ceremony that will take place on the 16th and the 17th of July 2026 at the Mercury Hotel. And then on the 15th of July, we will have our oath-taking ceremony, which will take place at the Gateway Conference Center in Windhoek. And we are also glad that we will have over 2,000 parents and also guardians that will grace their presence during this graduation ceremony and oath-taking, celebrating with the children and the graduates this milestone achievement.
100%. And on that note particularly, thank you, Crystal, for taking the time to talk to us and our listeners for this upcoming event. And we will see each other. Crystal, there's a quick question we got from a listener, if you have an opportunity. The listener is asking, is it possible also if you could specify which graduates are attending for 16 and 17 respectively during the graduation process?
Well, that is a really good question, and we have received this on our social media platforms, and also we plan to respond officially this afternoon or later today on that. But while we are on that, because our certificate in enrolled nursing graduates make up the most or the highest, the largest number of graduates for this graduation, we have reserved them to graduate during the 17th of July graduation ceremony. But on the first day, which is the 16th of July 2026, the following programs will graduate, and that is Master of Occupational Health and Safety, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Business Administration, Postgraduate Diploma in Higher Education, and then also the Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honors Degree, the Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences, and then also the Certificate in Pharmacy. Those are the graduates that will graduate on the 16th of July, and on the 17th of July, we will have respectively, exclusively, the enrolled, the certificate in enrolled nursing graduates that will be graduating on the 17th.
100%. And I hope to the listener who posted that particular question for us on our socials that they obviously just, you know, they captured that particular response.
Yes, we will release an official notice by the end of today.
Thank you. On that note, Crystal, thank you once again for joining us here on air, specifically just to tell us all about the upcoming events, specifically of the graduation and of the impressive numbers, specifically of the latest batch, the latest cohort of students to be graduated.
All right. No, thank you, Dwight, and to all the listeners.
100%. Thank you once again, Crystal, and good enjoy the rest of the day.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And on that note, dear listeners, there you have it, specifically with the expectant graduation to take place in this coming, not this week, next week, and obviously all the particular details that were supplied right there. On that note, stay tuned. We'll be coming back with the home run right after this.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back, and we'll continue where we left off with our civil society discussion. And we're at the point where we're just talking about civil society in general, and we went a little bit to Walvis Bay, and we went straight to Walvis Bay and were there in the closed door meeting.
Yes.
Yeah, but look, but.
That also sounds like the old protocol observed.
I know, right?
Which was also in Walvis Bay.
Okay, no more meetings for Walvis Bay.
Yeah, because Walvis Bay technically has just...
Because every time there's a meeting in Walvis Bay, there's little to zero information that comes out of it.
Yeah.
At least, let me just say, okay, there is some information that comes out of it, but the meetings are held with questionable transparency.
Or, it's usually a discussion of... we give you a small one paragraph brief just to explain that we are here.
We're here and,
and who is here, which is in the old protocol observed speech.
Now, there are some nice numbers that I would like to, to point out coming out of Afrobarometer. Just had to close a bunch of things so that I'm not screwing things up on my phone. One thing I like about their website is they categorize things per country. So I found Tanzania. There's a Tanzanian reference with regards to how the Tanzanian people trust their justice system.
Yeah.
They seem to have a lot of trust in the justice system. But the only parts where they have a little bit of issues is the affordability component, but the largest group have something of negative to say in terms of reliability of the justice system is that, a lot of them believe that it can get the job done.
Yeah.
It is there. It is effective. yeah, there's that positivity to it. But the length with which they take to get the job done, that's where a lot of people go, eish. Yeah, I know. Look, I can report a case. I know they will see it through, but the thing is, it's going to take forever. But, well, applying the law is a very, let me just use the word petty. It's a very petty thing. It's a very petty thing. So that's one of the reasons why it take, you know, why it takes long. Because, you know, for the most part, people are just arguing on what words in a sentence mean. And, both sides can basically interpret the very same sentence in multiple different ways that are opposing. So, but, I mean, reading that about Tanzania made me go, that's an interesting one. That's a very interesting one. Mm. But, on Namibia now, the publications that are coming out of Namibia has to do with participation, the ordinary Namibian participation into what's going on in their country. They it's now split in two different categories where you have they are looking at from 18 to 35 and then 36 and above. In everything from participating in public discourse to participating in protest, or more like reaching out to their public officials with the concerns that they have in relations to development, or just basically everything community related, governance related. The numbers are being dominated by people that are 36 and above.
Yeah.
Now, 36 and 35 and below, that means this is the age group that is categorized as youth group. Now, and this is also the age group that is, larger in number. It's dominating the population statistics. Now, one thing that raises the question is that, the bigger category of the country in terms of population size in comparison to youth versus the people that are over 36 that are not categorized as youth, in terms of participating in everything governance related, the numbers are still being dominated by the small group, not the bigger one, which is somewhat, you have things upside down.
Yeah.
Now, you'd expect that, since the youth are the majority, they will make up a large number of people that are showing up to public meetings or stakeholder engagements or consultations and stuff like that. No, they are not. Which, it's not only that we have a bad youth group or something like that. As you can imagine, as in everything, there are a lot of factors at play here. If you are looking at people that are, 18, from 18 to 34, for example, 18 to 35, when all these engagements are being held, where are most of the people, most likely going to be? Now you have those ones that are maybe going to have classes if they're still in the university. And
or
you have,
they rely on us, the media.
Or they just, they're like, I'll just tune into, to Home Run. Thank you very much.
Yours truly.
Yeah.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is, one thing I like about from the Afro Parameter report is how they categorize, different age groups and their participation into different government related, or more like national interest related initiatives, so from political to commercial or economic discussions. But the questions now that begins to raise is what does that mean for civil society? Because as one thing I like about the civil society, initiatives, or the whole idea of civil society, is that it talks about tackling problems national problems from a citizen level. Because a lot of problem solving, or more like problem tackling initiatives on a national level, are tailored towards a central government.
Mm.
The government, which to some degree abuses the whole idea of public representative, representative governance. We'll just vote someone to be in office, and then we'll just, walk blindly with time here, because we have already voted in someone who will do, why should I pay attention to what's taking place in the country's economy? Because, well, I voted in the president, and then, you know, the constitution gives her the power to appoint some ministers, and some of them comes in by different other means. So we have this group of public officials whose job is to make sure that they run the country. They make sure that they know what's going on in the country, to make sure that where service provision is needed, how to expand it, how to finance, and all those things. So we vote them to do exactly that. So we can just sit back, relax, and enjoy. But civil society sort of like it taps you on your shoulder with that type of thinking and say, that's actually not how it's supposed to be. Yes, you voted in public officials, but you also have to stay engaged with what they are up to, because you have to understand you are giving them power. And the power is just toxic.
Well, can I tell you the story of what I did with a WhatsApp group where a bunch of Namibian journalists are on?
Yeah.
So, some of these journalists, they don't understand. Okay, let me be honest. I'm not going to bash my own sector. So, Helmut, it happens, because... Yeah. You see it, what footballers do with each other when they bring on Zlatan Ibrahimovic that says, no, that team is rubbish. And you go like, it's Zlatan, you were supposed to not use the word rubbish. You were supposed to use another English word, but okay. Yeah. So, some of the journalists, okay, let me rather say a lot of them don't know what labor relations is.
Huh?
Yes, they don't. They don't know that they are an employee with an employer relationship.
What?
Yes, Helmut. Yes, Helmut. They don't know this. Now, sometimes...
Look, there are only two things. You're either an employer or an employee.
Yes. They don't understand that basic economic designation in 2026. Now, because a lot of them obviously were dodging...
Okay.
Because a lot of them dodged mathematics and other particularly sort of like highly technical subjects. Because you ask people sometimes, what did you study?
Mm-hmm.
I like doing that specifically with colleagues. Because you remember, I kept doing it with you.
Mm-hmm.
You obviously know why I do it, because sometimes I try to see if I can have a conversation with the person.
Yeah.
But in many cases, you realize that the fellow journalists in the rest of the Namibian landscape, they selected the journalism and communication field primarily just to dodge mathematics. Their main aim was to dodge math. However, they're the first ones to shout when there are numbers that don't reflect in their bank accounts. They're the first ones. Now, on the one specific...
dodge mathematics.
On the one specific
when
day...
When you put it like that.
On the one specific day, ne? On the one specific day...
Yeah.
These guys were just going on about, just at one particular entity, it was Namibian related in the landscape of Namibia, but they were going on about, employee-employer relations. And then they were sounding like as if they are unique, for example, like
the
finance
part
department in their organization.
Yeah.
But it was specifically one or two people. And then I told them, listen, guys, you guys are actually, as the journalist, because usually the conversation on that WhatsApp group is like, you know, five chickens together. Have you ever heard five chickens together, Helmut? I know you've heard five chickens together. It's just five chickens making noise. But it literally looks like a discussion. So to me, it looked like five chickens on this WhatsApp group that just were reinforcing each other's opinions, which are clearly not coming from an informed perspective.
Yeah.
From the perspective I already grounded for us to know from the get-go. And then I told them, listen, guys, you guys are sounding like a bunch of, I use the word specifically that they're not right in the head, psychopaths, or, you know, like mentally unstable people, because you guys don't understand that you are an employee in a contract with an employer.
Yeah.
And then I told them, listen, if you guys also want to know something, Oh, no. The actual chicken discussion was based upon they were labeling someone else in this discussion as being psychologically unstable, you know, being a psycho.
Mm-hmm.
And then I told them, do you know what is one of the top 10 jobs that psychos work in, where you'll find the most psychopaths.
Don't say media.
No, media is like number 10 or number 20 or something like that, a journalist.
There's a whole list of disciplines.
First one uh-huh. is a politician. Second one is like a police officer. Third one is like a lawyer.
Oh, boy.
Then you get surgeons, like doctors, those specialist doctors, surgeons. You get, what's the other thing's name? Us, journalists and reporters, business owners and CEOs.
The corporate world, no surprises also.
Full of it, yes. Yeah. Religious people.
No surprises.
Yeah. What is the other one? There's another one also, man, which is also very, what is the one? But it's like a whole range of them. It's like more than 10. Mm-hmm. So I shared the link, and before I shared the link, I made sure that, you know, is it something based upon someone who is supposedly a psychologist's particular inputs? And I shared the backup link that connects to this link. And I shared it and I put it there. It's like, listen, guys, the exact thing that you guys are doing, calling someone else a potential psychopath, you guys also form part of it, because it seems like there's a mental disconnect somewhere. Now, yeah. I know we went somewhere completely different in this discussion. You know, I deviated. But at the heart of it, basically, when civil society tries to look at, for example, the impact, like the basis of our discussion technically stems from last week's particular event that I had to record, where the civil society guys were looking at civil society in Namibia and the Africa peer review mechanism branch in Namibia and achieving the common developmental goals of Namibia in that regard. And there obviously was a lot being said, and many of our Eagle FM listeners know that I've interviewed a whole bunch of people, specifically like Mr. Uhuru Dempish, who's a pretty prominent figure in the civil society landscape. And the scenario that stems from this is obviously also understanding how civil society is trying to achieve developmental goals in their regard, by like being an unofficial but rather a very present assistant to the national government and the national government's functionaries like regional and local authorities. Mm. So in the broader landscape of the scenario that I also cited is, in some cases, your example was based upon how is the information shared. In some cases, many of the journalists believe that they go to the same public event, they go capture the content, and they believe, it's my content. Meh. It's my content.
Yeah.
Helmut, today, and just like last week, or was it? No, it wasn't on Monday, but let's just, also back in last week, I stand sometimes while recording the content at these events, and, you know, the people make their speeches, then I stand there thinking to myself, my brain just goes and wanders in one direction, and I go like, I sometimes wonder why some of the prominent dignitaries or faces or people in this country sometimes say that we, the media, have to carry the message over like that. Firstly, as if they paid for us. Let's note that. I'm pointing to some of those people that some love saying that sentence. As if you paid for us, because we got there by our own petrol. In many cases, you don't advertise in the private media landscape in Namibia.
Yeah.
You are hoping.
Cross your fingers and hope someone will see your WhatsApp status.
You are hoping that we carry your message over verbatim. We don't have such a contractual agreement with you. Mm-hmm. You need to pay for that. But on another dimension, when it comes to like critical information, for example, critical information like understanding, like let's say like the State of the Nation address. Yeah. Now, the president is a politician.
Yeah.
The people she's talking to in that National Assembly are politicians. They all know the same game. The Namibian watching that address does not know that game. The Namibian listening to Eagle FM when we play that address does not know that game. They don't know the ins and the outs. And I sometimes love it when, you know, when I sort of like spoke to my resident
psychologist or political analyst.
A political analyst. About what politicians do. Now, politicians love using us, the media. I'll say it again. Politicians love using it. And you know what's the worst part, Hamun? There are editors in this country who love parroting a politician. They love parroting the words of a politician. That's so much fun. They take that statement, lick it like you, like, you know, used to do with the envelope, seal it onto the front page. Boom.
There you have it.
There you have it. Whether it's positive or negative. The electorate, the fans of that politician, goes like, my favorite politician is in the news.
Right here.
That person is getting exposure. Do you know that I, for the better part of my life, I never could understand why Namibians were praising politicians in this country like they were celebrities. Until my resident political scientist explained to me, it's because they love running to their favorite politician, their favorite journalist, their favorite media.
I have a story for
you. To connect to the electorate. Do you know what's the worst part? I'll give an example. Do you know what's the worst part? There are some. Yes, there are legacy journalists today.
Yeah.
But if you read their articles, Hamut, in the basis of standard report writing or article writing, you cannot give me a sentence of, according to sources close to this particular person, this and this and this happened. Or based on knowledge that this publication or entity has seen this and this has happened. Now, in the broader discourse of sharing knowledge, let's say as a media house with an audience, that audience member will say, what did I learn today from this article? How is it impacting my life? Will it provide change to my life? Am I going to see some sort of results? Well, if you've got vague, ambiguous, unclear wording in an article.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even all the Disney books that I read as a kid have never been unclear. They've never been ambiguous. They've never used vague terminology to describe a sentence to me. And in the basis of communication, being vague and being unclear doesn't help to disseminate information. Now, here's the thing now, Hamut. In terms of the work of the APRM, in my everyday life, I don't think about the APRM, which is affiliated to the AU, but it's a volunteer, what's the thing they call it here? It's a voluntary African Union initiative through which participating countries assess their governance, democracy, economic management, and socioeconomic development. Now, in the broader scheme of things, how many Namibians do you think talk about the impacts that the AU try to achieve on the continent? Besides the buddies that you tried having that discussion with where they asked you, Helmut, where are you getting these things? And you told them, no, I read. Besides those guys.
Yeah, I was asking, I'm talking to someone that works in the media, man. And, I bring up COP29 and they've no clue.
Bruh. Are we talking about the same person?
No.
That visited you here at the office?
No.
Okay.
It's in a different one.
This is a different
one. I mean, that one doesn't work in the media. I totally understand. Hey.
But that one works in UN. And that person also asked you the same question.
Yeah, that was before she got that whole idea. You know,
but it also shows the communication.
Someone has a major in it. Okay, you know what? Before I start giving people information,
all you need to know is that there were probably more than one person that graduated with that qualification. To say you can just go on.
Yeah. Now, so COP29, what is COP29? Like, you get the media, don't you? How do you not know this? Because, look, the question I couldn't help but ask myself is, okay, now, what is it that you talk about?
Okay, let me help that person in defending them. It's like some of the people here in Namibia asked me, don't I know this artist, this cultural celebrity?
Mm-hmm.
And I told them, no, why must I know them? Firstly, they're not part of my taste. Do they perform? No, they don't. Okay, so why must I know them?
But how do you find yourself in the media and you don't know what's going on? I mean, like environmental discussions and energy transitions and all this. These are like major subjects in the media industry. In media space.
True. But some of the concerns are sometimes a reader and a viewer and a listener.
Yeah.
They have the absolute right, Helmut, of what they want to read and watch and listen to.
Yeah, but this is not a reader. This is someone that works in media.
I know. Mm. That's why I'm telling you. Yeah. They can ignore whatever I produce.
Yeah.
They can ignore it. For example, I bumped into a guy that was my senior in high school at St. Torres.
Mm-hmm.
In Maromo, I bumped into him. And he said, Dwight, I love what Eagle FM does. But
shout out.
But, and there was a but. I could hear the but. Yeah. And he said, but I sometimes want you guys to step up the knowledge sharing.
Mm.
You know, get a little bit more intricate. Get a little bit more detailed. Share a little bit more knowledge. Now, there's two things primarily what I've observed in Namibia that happens. It's either we've got specialists to talk to or to interview. Or sometimes it's a scenario like what I gauged when the green hydrogen program started in Namibia.
Yeah.
And I started talking about green hydrogen, I think, late 2021, when President Geingob and his expedition party at that stage to COP20. What was it, COP26 or COP27? The one in Glasgow. The one in, no, not in Glasgow. The one in Scotland that they went to.
COP27.
27, yeah. When they went there. When him and his expedition party came back. Yeah. Because it was literally an expedition party for them because he had to go and announce the thing. Remember?
Yeah.
So when green they came back. Then they had most the media day event at State House.
Yeah.
And they came back and then 2022, Russia-Ukraine war breaks out. And then they almost went to, what's the event's name? To Davos. 2022. They went to Davos. From 2021 into 2022, Helmut, for approximately 6 months.
Oh, Davos for the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have had spoken at least once a month about green hydrogen developments, technology, science, research and development, and so on.
Yeah.
Only in 2024 that some of the callers and listeners here of Eagle FM started gauging, and they open up sometimes. I don't know. I sometimes become a little bit of a psychologist, but they open up and they said, Dwight, can you explain the green hydrogen again and its impacts and what it aims to do?
Yeah.
So that means, in some scenarios, people hear the thing, they listen, and they go on with their lives.
Yeah.
And they hear about the thing from some other media source. And then they are slightly, confused because it seems like it's not so clear.
Yeah.
And then they hear us again here on Eagle FM talking about green hydrogen. And then they hear it from some other source again. And they're like, because literally for like 6-7 months now, not many of the like established,
media entities.
Didn't break what green hydrogen is, but didn't break it down. They didn't break it down. They didn't go into what the potential for this thing is.
Okay, but last time I checked, these experts representing these entities are more than willing, for the most part, to share this information.
No, this is post 2022. I'm talking about in that span of 2021. This COP usually happens when? October.
Yeah.
No, October is
somewhere around
assembly, general assembly. It's just after General Assembly between... No, it's November. So in that period, after the UN... President Geingob first announced it at the UN General Assembly. Then he went to the COP in Glasgow. And then he went... Then they went to Davos. And then... So he did like three... Like,
Davos, Davos, that's the beginning of the year.
Yeah. The beginning of 2022.
Yeah.
Or was it 2023? Yeah, 2022. So in that space, President Geingob literally mentioned the thing like more than once. He and his team, unveiled it more than once. Stemming from that particular discussion, only the experts only started showing up after 2022, from 2023.
Yeah.
Because I went to a masterclass session for journalists in 2023, where the physicist in who lives in Swakop, Dr. von Urten, was brought to Windhoek by GIZ to explain to us, the journalists.
Mm-hmm.
And then two of the journalists, one guy from Namba, won't mention any names, sorry, and another, and at that stage, she's an editor now at the Namibian newspaper, but she was at that stage still freelance. They thought the government had buy-in. They thought the government had ownership in an investor-driven discussion. Yeah, the government did have ownership, the land part. But remember where the land is. The land is in potentially, okay, the land designated is in the Tsau Kei National Park. The Tsau Kei National Park, Hamlet, is literally the Sperrgebiet or the Sperrgebiet or the no man's land where your car cannot stop next to the road on the way to Lüderitz.
What does that translate into? It's not part of Namibia.
No, it is part of Namibia.
So it's a no man's land. So that means if it's part of Namibia and it's then you can talk about Namibia owning a land part.
But Namibia gave the land. So then we don't own it anymore. If I am giving you the land, Helmut, to build something on it, then you don't own it anymore. It's not like if they
give. Okay, now I'm confused.
Not transaction. I gave you $1 for 1 hectare. Mm-hmm. No. That's the action.
That doesn't make sense.
It's investor driven. Now, if you step away from that, those pieces of knowledge now, you have to ask yourself, what does the average person, for example, let's say in Karas here, in terms of information?
Yeah.
What does the average person listen to in terms of seeking information, clarity, and insight into topics that impact them?
Yeah.
Because here's the thing about civil society engagement with the Namibian branch of the APRM was that the overall discussion is that they were assessing up until 2026, you know, what has been the relationship between civil society in Namibia and the APRM branch of Namibia. Now, Namibia technically has its own development plans since 2000 or when Vision 2030 was announced. We've had our own development plans. In between, we've had President Geingob's more detailed Harambe prosperity plans, 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, our boat has just been chugging along on that river, you know, trying to achieve Vision 2030. But now that something like green hydrogen shows up in a span of this 10 years, this decade, from 2021 to 2030, we literally have to achieve industrialization. But we are on course to achieve it, Helmut. But then you start hearing of the potential roadblocks. The dips, like 29 jobs to 1 Namibian that can do the technical jobs that will be created by the green hydrogen program in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that speak to civil society being in the know about what green hydrogen does? Does? Because many of them back in 2024, when I was at the mining, the oil and gas in Daba. It was literally called the oil and gas, or is it the mining in Daba? Because it was religious groups, traditional leaders, associations, and civil society that hosted this thing at the Roman Catholic Church or the Cathedral, St. Mary's Cathedral here in Windhoek. And the conversations that I had, you know, between the discussions and the speeches, the people literally say, no one came to talk to us. And when they come and talk to us, they come and have PowerPoint presentations and they speak English. And the one guy speaks Afrikaans, the other guy speaks Musubia, the other guy speaks, I don't know what the Himba speak there in Kunene, but everybody basically said they don't break the terms, the terminology, the jargon down to our level of thinking.
So it becomes a language barrier on two levels.
It becomes in understanding the term.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you and I know, Helmut, in many cases, many local Namibian languages, they don't have a word for hydrogen.
That's the thing.
They don't have a word for even calcium, which is part of your bones.
Basically your teeth. The bones, same WhatsApp group.
Yeah. They don't have a word potentially also for, let's for example say, cellular. which is for your mobile phone technology, cellular, or even for Wi-Fi. Ne? So then I actually argued with my sister about the Afrikaans word for hydrogen. We saw it in the Afrikaans daily. They use the word water.
Waterjin.
What's the word? What's the word? They use the word waterstof. And I was like, how could they use the word waterstof? And my sister was like, what's wrong, Dwight? It is actually the word. That's the correct word.
Yeah.
To describe hydrogen. Because I was looking for hydrogen. But if you realize what the hydro part is, which technically is the Greek word for water.
Yeah.
Then you go like, oh, so it's basically the basic molecule, if you combine it with oxygen, that gets you the water vapor or the water itself. So they use the word waterstof. And yeah. We were debating, and I think to myself, but it's gaseous. So it is, unfortunately, the correct term, waterstof. Now, Afrikaans can do that.
Yeah.
But it's not the same for many other languages in this country.
What
would you call hydrogen, Helmut, in Timbukushu?
Oh, boy. I don't want to insult people.
But if you think about it, just like what I now gave you, like what water is.
Look,
hydrogen is in Afrikaans. Waterstof, they call it basically. It's basically, if I translate it back to English, it's like water. What's the three phases?
Solid, liquid, and gas.
Solid, liquid, gas. Yeah. So it's literally saying water gas.
Yeah.
Because it's the most gaseous form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's literally the thing. But then if you ask me what is fuel, the word fuel,
yeah.
And I tell you in Afrikaans, it's brandstof. Brandstof, and you translate it back to English, from brandstof to English,
yeah.
It would technically translate to you as burning something, or burning gas, or burning something. Because the word stof
mm-hmm.
can be dust, you know, kicked up. He scopped stof up.
I thought it was hot plate.
Ah, no, stove. That's stove. The other word is stoof. Oh. Double O. This is single O. Brandstof. Waterstof. So stof is dust.
Mm.
Nee? But dust, you and I know, is basically very fine sand particles that can be kicked up into the air. So you instantaneously get an idea that it has to be something gaseous, but when you come to brandstof, which is literally fuel, it is in liquid form.
So
it basically tells you the word stof can be like, just to substitute another part of the word to say this thing.
It's more of a thing.
Yeah. If you think about it in English, mm-hmm. it's more like thing. But if you say brandstof, it's fuel. If you say waterstof, it's hydrogen. Do you see the two different states?
Cheers.
If you say, there's another word that also used the word stof at the end. What's the one? Don't confuse it with middle. English middle has got the L-E at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Ne? Afrikaans middle is you swap the two letters E-L. Middle technically could be like cleaning equipment or cleaning or detergent or in that sense. It's something that can't be consumed, but it is predominantly a chemical and, you know, stuff like that.
That is in other way. So when it comes to information sharing, I think also one of the biggest barriers that we are facing, not just from where this information is, is produced and compiled to where it's disseminated, which is most likely the media industry.
Yeah.
Is the main stumbling block that is basically clogging the whole channel and flow information. Okay, the flow information is somewhat
flawed. Toilet,
yeah, yeah. Look, it's the translation That's a problem here.
Now people will think we are intentionally blocking this.
Yeah, no, we are not intentional blocking. It's significantly a language barrier, and that language barrier goes beyond the literal language barrier. Because take for example, if the Ministry of Health comes up with an initiative, they want to make people aware of some health hazard that they should be aware of and how to avoid it. This information, for the most part, is coming out of the scientific community or scientific research community in that particular discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah. And these are experts in their field. These are specialists. They are writing all these things in a language that only someone who is in their discipline can understand. So someone then will have to break that down for the media personnel like you and me to understand, and then we have to share that with our listeners or with our readers. Mm. Now, for those that do not speak, understand English, someone will have to translate that from English to whatever native language that they are going to be translate it into.
Yeah.
Which now leaves the translator, It's a mammoth task that you're faced with, considering that a lot of words that are used in this language, English piece of literature, you don't have them in your native language.
Yep.
Yeah. So that means the translation of a lot of different words in all kinds of disciplines, so all across the country, basically, all across, just think of it as the entire school curriculum, must be translated. We have to find words for them in our native languages for any easy communication. It wasn't until a few days ago when I found out that the word Mediterranean is made out of two words. They say, they say, is it Medi and Terranean?
Mm.
Yeah, so you have, Medi for middle and Terran for terrain, which basically means land. So Mediterranean Sea, to break it in three words, will be Middle Terrain Sea, because it's in between, you have the Gulf region here,
yeah.
And Africa on one side.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
basically, look at it like this, Hamoud.
Yeah.
Southern Europe,
yeah.
Middle East, Africa.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a unlike your Indian and Atlantic and Pacific. This is a sea that is basically sandwiched in between portions of land. So that's why it's called Mediterranean Sea.
Mm.
It's Middle Terrain Sea. Now, I came across that watching a Russian documentary, because they kept saying,
is it on YouTube again?
Yeah, on YouTube.
Yeah, I also started seeing them now on YouTube. The Russians are starting to make now content. Yeah. I'm like, hey, look at these guys.
Yeah, yeah. So Mediterranean Sea for them is middle. They have two words for this. They have Sredi, which is the same word for Wednesday,
mm.
but for Mediterranean is they have Mieždu is middle.
Mm.
Now Zimlje is earth. Mm. Now ocean is Mori. So you have.
So they don't have a difference between ocean and sea.
You have Morie. The only two words I know. Now you have Morie is Morie is sea, and the Rieke, that's river.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, the translation is pretty much the same. Zimli is earth, and Mieždu is middle, and Morie is sea. So you have middle. Both in English and in Russian, you have the same name for Mediterranean Sea. Now, if you break it down, it translates middle. You have middle as land and sea.
Mm.
So this is a portion of ocean or of a sea that's in between different lands. So I think that type of translation is something that we have to, we can easily adopt, because it's very easy to follow through. And if you can look at it, it's pretty much the same thing that English have done. If you look at words like hydrogen, for example, now the word hydrogen is made out of it's primarily made of the hydro part, literally means water in Greek. So, but then they just took the hydro part and then added on that a suffix gen to make it took that name and gave it to a gas.
Yeah.
And if you look at basically a bunch of English words themselves are different words glued together. International means inter, and national. So it's in between nations. So not intra. But both the intra and inter, but inter means more like inside. But and both the intra has something to do with either something translation translates basically into either in between or inside.
Yeah.
So to translate, take for example, a science subject into a native language. Spiritu Santo. That's
wow. I'm just now reading the gin in hydrogen.
Yeah.
Technically, trans is forming or creator.
So forming water. Yeah. So hydrogen means forming water because
hydrogen is the most hydrogen-like carbon is the most common molecule you'll find not just on planet Earth but also in the universe.
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, it makes up much of the sun's mass.
What? Modern Latin hydrogenium. The word was coined in 1787 by G. de Morveau.
Morveau what?
By three people. I'm now looking up etymology. Etymology is literally like the stuff.
The origin.
The origins of this concept or this thing. So, established in 1791, firstly as hydrogen from the French hydrogène, which was modern Latin at the time of hydrogenium.
Okay, so that means all these translations, like your Mediterranean International, so just break it down.
Yeah.
Just break it down.
Yeah. Now the suffix, like you now explained the Wednesday thing.
Yeah.
That G-E-N, we write it in English today.
Yeah.
Is from the French G-E-N-E, which technically translates to the producing part. Obviously the AI explainer summary that usually it starts in your Google searches.
Yeah.
They just grab from all the other sources, but I actually went into the one source.
Yeah.
But then there's the nativized one of the Russians. The Russian one is Vodorod. The German one is Wasserstoff, Wasserstoff,
Vodorod.
Which is Vodorod, yeah.
And yeah, no, what oxygen is?
What?
Kislerod.
So if you want Harry Potter bad characters, you name the one Vodorod and the other one Kislerod. I don't want to know what nitrogen is.
Don't ask.
I don't want to know what nitrogen is. Because if someone who has a performance car wants to say, I put some nitrogen oxide in my car, yeah. I don't want to know what nitrogen
is. Yeah, but there are a lot of things you don't want to know. Yeah. One of them is the word shield. Don't ask.
What is the word shield?
No, I can't say it. It's an insult.
Literally?
Yeah.
Is it an insult in English?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Just so that you guys know. Learn Russian at your own
at your own
risk. If you have to be boxing people every day for descriptions, listen to me. to describe things, go ahead.
Okay, so for information sharing, our biggest problem would be breaking down this information. Whether you're looking at it, you can look at it from pretty much any discipline.
Mm.
You can look at it at this from any discipline. Whether it's a conference of parties, for example, your climate change, all these things involves a lot of science, which we still have a lot of words that are, it's either we don't know them or they are, you know, they remain untranslated. Again, it's not a train smash like you always like to put it, because this can be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was done. What's the thing you say the other day that English is badly pronounced French.
Yeah.
So, pardon me.
And if you guys don't believe me, literally a French linguist said this in a TV interview. He wrote a book and he was interviewed about his book.
It's languages are languages are a combination of a lot of different words. Someone just put in the effort to translate it. That's it.
Yeah.
But
they were paid for it. How much they can?
Of course they were.
Now, when you come here to Namibia or Africa, where you tell people, I can translate this thing for you, will you pay me? And then the people go like, ah, why must we pay you for? Why are we paying?
But, because it takes.
But if you go to like the US,
yeah,
people are millionaires for impersonating make-believe characters. Yeah, actors are millionaires for playing a role, playing fancy dress, acting a specific way. I'm like.
You know, ever since I came to the realization of that, you know, I started watching behind the scenes. It ruined my love for science fiction.
You should see behind the scenes of horror movies. Horror, not thriller.
Mm-hmm.
Horror movies. Mm-hmm. Sci-fi horror, general horror.
Mm-hmm.
Watch that. Then you know some of those awful sounds that they make.
Uh-huh.
Some cases, man, the sound engineer guy was a guy using vegetables. And he would break smash them. Or
cabbages, cabbage.
Or he would just do this with a cabbage stone. The whole time. You should see.
I'm here in the evening, terrified to death because of a cabbage.
You're having PTSD from a movie. Do you know what's the worst part, man?
Because of vegetables.
Do you know what's the worst part? There's a lady that they showed here in 2024. I started seeing these videos on my YouTube feed, and then the thumbnail of the video says,
mm-hmm.
"Have you ever wondered how some of the sounds in your movies or in your favorite series or are made or in your favorite cartoons are made?" It's a lady in her house, bruh. The most contracted person that does is a woman in the US. In her house, in her living room, they send her a sample of the video, She plays it in front of herself.
Yeah.
No, there's no internet connection stuff. Plays it in front of herself. Then she has to make the sounds there. Then she records herself making the sound for every scene, you know, to make it sound natural and stuff like that.
But look, man, when I came across one of those videos, there was someone who was literally breaking down cabbage.
I know.
It was cabbage.
I know.
And I'm like, okay, hang on a second. A Friday evening with my popcorns, I'm here terrified to death because of this sound.
Because of a cabbage sound.
Because of a cabbage sound.
And you know what's the worst part, man? That guy had been doing it so long, Hamud.
Yeah.
That man.
Yeah.
Because he started like in the 90s.
Yeah.
With that.
They basically master. They can just look at a scene and will tell you that, you know what, this
sound. What's the most appropriate sound, Now, do you know what they call that in the credits of the video?
Yeah.
Special effects.
I don't see you making money from that in Africa.
Special effect. Now you wonder why? What's his name? Your favorite movie from Uganda?
Oh, who killed the Captain Alex?
Now you wonder why Captain Alex looks like a kindergarten project, ne? And then you realize, but the main movies I've been watching were all along kindergarten projects.
Exactly.
Yeah. With some soup on the side.
So we have to translate.
We have to translate. It's about how the final product gets to an audience.
Yeah.
Ne? That's it. Straightforward.
So now that means for us to share, to get whatever information that we want to get to the audience, because every source of information, obviously you have a target audience.
Yeah.
So, especially I think, and I didn't think of this when I was, when we were coming up with this and compiling all this information, but the thing is, I think this is even more mind numbing for the civil society. Because for civil society, you're talking about being on a constant engagement with the people on the ground.
True.
Yeah. Now, that means...
Sometimes they ask you also for money, the people on the ground.
Say what?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you know what some of the concerns?
Mm-hmm.
Look, if it's not a conservancy where there's a traditional authority,
because
you can work with a traditional authority.
Yeah.
But if the traditional authority gets paid money by the government.
Yeah.
So that means the inner circle, the main guy or the main woman... So, but the money just stops there. What's the main theme of Namibia? Inclusive development for all. Ne?
Yeah, but decentralization is one thing.
Don't use decentralization yet.
Inclusive.
The main aim is everybody is included in the shared prosperity. Ne? However, when you look at the pathways to achieving it, community-based resource management looks like the best one, but that's only if there is a conservancy or an actual resource and that there's an actual customer that comes and pays money to access the resource. And then you know the money goes into job and creation and real community benefits. But what I'm just explaining to you right there, Helmut, with community-based resource management is literally a commercial activity. There must be a resource. There must be a customer. You just have to facilitate to procuring, to getting the money from the customer to get to the resource. Do you see what I'm explaining to you?
Yeah.
So I'm basically explaining to you what the shopping malls are doing to us.
Exactly.
The shopping malls just went and coordinated with all the retailers and said, I've got this piece of land. I'm going to develop it. I want you guys to have rental contracts in my property, in my development. And we pool all those consumers to one spot. We centralize it. Instead of you paying individual rentals here down Independence Avenue with bad parking, with bad access streets from the trunk road. Independence is the trunk road.
Mm-hmm.
Bad access streets. Poor security capabilities. Because City of Winter won't take responsibility for security if you put your shopping from one shop in your boot and then the asset forfeiture department is sitting right here on the pavement watching you put your stuff in the boot. There is no such guarantee of safety. Do you see literally what happened, Helmut?
Okay, look, I'm looking at this now from an energy transition standpoint.
Okay. You are still on energy.
Yeah, I'm still on energy transition because it's such a big topic.
Yeah.
And our country is a signatory to the Paris Climate Agreements.
Yeah.
So now, when you look at it that way, you just have to understand how much translating we have to do as a country to keep, the people up to par with the information that we need to know with regards to which direction the country is headed in terms of development.
Yeah.
Because your internal combustion engine,
how did that happen? Those guys were not actual certified engineers like we have to have certified engineers today.
No, they were not.
Did you remember the rocketeering club in that Germany had at the time before the failed Austrian painter showed up that I mentioned? Before the First World War.
Yeah.
Do you remember that discussion I told you that they had amateur rocket clubs? Mm-hmm. People were just fascinated with shooting things in... People were just fascinated with shooting things into the sky. Today... And I know there's actual public safety rules.
Yeah.
Don't just shoot things in the sky.
Till they realize that, you know what, none of these things going to...
It uses gunpowder?
Yeah.
Is it a bullet? Oh my goodness, no. Go and seek a permit from your local authority or from the local police office, either local police station. Look at me calling it a local police office, a post office. But yeah.
Fun fact, one easy way of starting a fire...
Mm.
Even under damp conditions, is glycerin and potassium permanganate. Mix those two.
Guys, please don't take that advice.
Don't take that.
You just explained now Greek fire, ne, Helmut?
Yeah, you're right, Greek fire, because that reaction is violent.
Please also don't Google Greek fire, please, people.
I don't think you will find those ingredients.
You will.
Really?
Oh, you will. You don't know how powerful Google is.
Ban the things in science I have Googled.
Do you know how many times I've Google searched something now, Hamoud?
Mm.
And all I did was just tweak my...
Your prompt.
My prompt now. Yeah. No, this is not a... Okay, technically, Google search is technically like a robot.
The first thing to pop up is
Yeah, but before the AI thing rolled up now, the summaries.
Yeah.
You just changed the prompt, the search question. And you... Now, it's not illegal in Namibia.
Yeah.
Let me stress that. It's not illegal. But it is unethical, what I did. So I would then see a whole tranche of documents on some of the SOE websites in Namibia. And all I did was just tweak my search parameter. And then I get into, and I'm literally in a server reading a document. But if you changed it back to the previous prompt, the same options won't show up.
No, you're reminding me of one guy that...
And I didn't even hack. All I did was use Google.
No, if you only bring that up, you bring, you know, you remind me of the Dialogue guys and their information that got leaked.
Oh, those guys.
Yeah.
And then they wanted to make it sound like the journalist is coming hacking, but all she did was just copy and paste from something and then put it in something. And then she's like, oh, here's the whole list. That's all she did. She used the tools at her command.
And those are the guys that are saying, I can protect your information. They can't even protect theirs. That's embarrassing.
From an app.
Yeah, very embarrassing. So a quick break on the other side.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. We continue with our civil society discussion. So civil society sharing information with the public to keep the general public up to date with what's going on in the country. That's the first goal. The second goal is to be an extra eye of oversight for public officials. And this is something that has been recommended by the anti-corruption representatives in the SADC region. Like, I swear every time these guys meet, one thing they recommend is, one thing they like to bring up, one thing that they like to discuss, or something that they almost always at the agenda is, how do we make sure that there is transparency? How do we make sure that there is no corruption going on, or how do we combat corruption, basically? I mean, they are anti-corruption bodies, but one of the things that they like to point out as a solution to the growing rampant corruption in the region is educate the public on what is going on. Just a civic education. Don't make everyone a legislative expert. Just a civic education so they can understand the basic and the ins and outs, the basic ins and outs of what's going on in the public sphere, especially in the procurement space. And with that is going to be one heck of a solution for two things. One is it will educate you'll have an educated citizens with regards to what's going on in their country. And the second thing is you will have an educated citizen with regards to knowing who to hold accountable and for what. And that's not an easy thing to do. Take for example, if you go to the Ministry of Defense with a problem that you should have taken to the Ministry of Finance, that's embarrassing because the individual at the Ministry of Defense that you'll be approaching will know from the get-go that this person has no clue what they're doing. And that is not entirely your fault, even though it's partly your fault because there's the internet. That's going to be one of those things of, if I was that person, I would just laugh at you. Actually, I don't have the physique to laugh at you in your face. I'll laugh at you once you are gone. I can't risk my teeth by laughing at you in your face. Now, civic education now, comes in very, means it's a, if you ask me, the most effective form of anti-corruption, because the more people are aware of what's going on in the public space, especially where the money is, that's a public procurement space, the more people will keep a watchful eye of what's going on here and when it's happening and how is it happening and is it going according to or against the procedures put in place. We're talking about your legislations like your Public Procurement Act. Once enough people in the country know about this and they keep an eye with what's going on in that space, and if anything goes wrong, it can easily be flagged because there are a lot of people watching. It's sort of like it begins to resemble what is called in tech as open source. The reason why it's difficult to manipulate open source softwares is there's always someone watching. Because a lot of people, and you have regular users of open source softwares like yours truly here, and you have experts, pardon me, that will flag if there's something wrong going on. Most likely to flag it than someone who doesn't know a thing about tech, at least not on a detailed level, like yours truly here. Now. So, to combat corruption through civil society by informing the public of what's going on in the public space in terms of governance is very effective. Is effective for me. That's why I think, the extractive industry, initiative, like your EATI institutions are a very brilliant idea. You have your fishing industry, transparency initiatives also, also a brilliant idea, because the more people know about what's going on in a particular space, the more difficult it is for any public official who is entrusted with the responsibilities of managing and running that particular public space. It's not impossible. It's definitely not impossible, but the goal is to make it difficult for anyone with long fingers covered in glue to basically get away with millions of federal level money. But the challenge is the main challenge is youth versus elders. Now I'm just I'm about to bite my tongue here. Youth versus elders. According to citizen engagement in Namibia of youth versus elders voted in the last elections. Voted in the last elections. How many people voted in the last elections? Voted in the last elections. This is from 2026. Yeah, somewhere around April, May. You voted in the last elections. 61% of the people that voted in the previous election are over the age of, from 18 to 35, 61%. But from 36 and above, 79%, almost 80%. Now, how many, the whole thing is basically split in two categories. You have, in terms of age groups, you have from 18 to 35 and from 36 and above. So there are different categories now. You have category number one is is the number of people that voted in previous election, and category number two is those that feel close to a political party. You have those that attend community meetings. You have those that joined with others to raise an issue. You have those that have contacted, and you have a category of those that have contacted local government councillors. You have a category of those that have contacted their MPs. You have a category of those that contacted traditional leaders for, with an issue. You have a category of those that participated in protests. Now, participating in protests is somewhat an interesting, has an interesting, flip in terms of, of numbers. Take, for example, in the stats of those that participated in the previous elections, 61% of them were in between the age of 18 to 35.
Yeah.
79% of them, 79% of them were 36 of age and above. Now, those that feel close to a political party, 44% of those that feel close to a political party fall within the age range of a youth group, 18 to 35. And you have 57% compared to 57% of those that feel close to a political party, those are of the ages 36 and above. And then you have the same statistics basically recurring in terms of differences. You have 36 and above dominating all the statistics from voting in elections, feeling close to political parties, attending community meetings. You have 36 and above is dominating all these things except one, participate in a protest. Then you have 18 to 35, they're dominating the statistics of participating in protest. Yeah. Now, I have so many questions here. If the majority of us don't participate in attending, if the majority of us don't feel close to political party, to political parties, and that's not something that I even, go for. But attending meetings, if the majority of us don't attend meetings and we are dominating protests, do we even know what we're protesting about?
You're still on protest. I am on if people can read or write. Can people read or write, or do they get access to the, or do they gain access to, for example, like the, what's the thing's name? To media sources, basically, that help them understand what are the major talking points in the country. Hamoud, I haven't done this exercise yet, but I haven't heard many of the other media people in this country, in Namibia, actively have active discussion about what the AFCFTA even is.
That's not standard procedure?
I'm talking about like two professionals chatting.
Uh-huh.
What AFCFTA is.
Yeah.
In some cases, they will have this discussion. Mm-hmm. In some cases, when you listen, when there's a Q&A at an event with a ministry or something, you will hear from the questions they ask whether they know something or they don't. Or they're showing up with, you know, someone said something to them, now they want clarity.
Which, I mean, that one I like because you are basically inquiring, but, you have the internet, come on.
Yes, you have the internet.
Please.
You could have read up before you showed up to the thing. Now, the dimension, and sometimes now what the media invites do now, is they give you like a little brief on why this particular event is happening.
Yeah.
What's the aim of this event? What does it signal to the broader Namibian public out there?
Yeah.
They literally give you now an explainer. The question, once again, is the person coming to capture, do they know why they're coming? Or are they just saying, I'm coming because they want to run away from their supervisor who's hounding them for, okay, tell me what you're going to do for work. And then they get saved, almost like
by
saved
event.
By the bell, by an event notice that came up and say, listen, I'm going to this thing. These particular people might be there. Stuff like that. So in the broader discourse, and I am actively using the word discourse, the broader discussion across the country.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these civil society guys have to go ask critical questions even of the communities they represent.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what NDB6 is? Because the same communities are also the ones that go and vote for things.
Mm-hmm.
Remember what I told you yesterday, which might sound like an accusation, the one about Rehoboth, about the people, for example, my sister told me on Sunday, the people that are councillors for that town council are people that come out of previously disadvantaged communities in Rehoboth.
That's a good
thing,
many
cases, they don't have running water or electricity at home. Yeah, Helmut, this is a reality in this country. Or they didn't even finish high school. This is a reality in this country. And one of them, potentially, is a guy that was recent.
Okay. Let me not go talk very far. I just might be beaten up at the gate.
We have cameras now. Don't forget that.
Not just that, I would be beaten up at the gate. Now they would know what I look like. But still.
Yeah.
If we are voting for politicians now who are treating literally politics, the representation, as a golden ticket to have a job, this technically means it's winning a popularity contest.
It's 50% of that, and it's
it depends on the community.
Go to
the community, Zamu.
Uh-huh.
And you will realize it's a nightmare. Let's say the football community.
Yeah.
Ne?
Yeah. Did you just finish the point?
There are guys earning US dollars tax-free. Ne?
Yeah.
Who didn't finish high school, Khutasa.
What are we doing with our lives?
What are we doing with our lives?
Now, if that is where we are in terms of, if you look at the unemployment statistics, you see that, it's very easy to start a political party and a church. I mean, the, you know, brokenness is biting hard. So, now that means if you have people that are using a public office, as a get out of jail a free card in terms of employment, which is not unheard of. Yeah, it's not surprising. Because if I was, at home and I don't have, I'm struggling to make ends meet and I'm presented with an opportunity like that.
Yeah.
99 to 100% chances I'm going to hop on that bandwagon. And then I'll find myself in a public office, as in a constituency councillor or, in a regional office, not knowing what the heck I'm even supposed to do.
Or like I discovered that a lot of our politicians are former teachers.
That gives me a little bit of faith.
A little bit.
Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, as long as those opportunities are there, as long as those loopholes are there, they will be exploited. Now, that makes even more need for civil society organizations.
Yeah.
Because now you are going to have one or two public officials that are in a particular public positions just to make money. 90% of the time, when they're approached by the, standing committees, to ask them about what's going on in their regional constituency, those are the guys that will ask what projects. Now, that means, getting those people in terms of voting them into public office and then sitting back and relaxing and having faith that they know what they are doing, they will represent you, is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
So that means, again.
But does the public know that the local councillor was asked
mm-hmm.
about projects?
Uh-huh.
Because the public is the one that goes and tells this local councillor, you are just talking rubbish, you just want me to vote for you, uh-huh. but I'm not getting anything in return for my vote.
Yeah.
That's the question also, Helmut.
Yeah, that means you have two groups here that needs to communicate. Now, see, the reason why civil society organization point of view in terms of combating corruption.
Yeah.
Because if a lot of people on the ground knows what's going on in the public space, then there will be a lot of people watching, making it very difficult for anyone in that particular office to abuse their office power.
Yeah.
Now, civic education must be then pushed on a large scale all across the country so that everyone knows what's going on in the Ministry of Health, what's going on in this ministry or that SOE.
Mm.
Yeah. So that's not just important to sort of curb corruption, but it's also important because, when something goes wrong in a particular ministry, you know who to call or you know who to call out. Because if you don't know what's going on in your country or who's in charge of who, and something happens in your village or in your community, you don't even know who to complain to. You will call the example I gave earlier is, you will call the Ministry of Defense to complain about something that's happening in the Ministry of Finance. And they will tell you, first of all, you will expose yourself that, up until this phone call, actually you still have no clue what's going on in your own country's public space. Now, there are two ways of looking at that. One, you can say, you know what, I'm not into politics. Yeah, which is something that I hear a lot. Now, the second one is, it doesn't matter what I do. You know, people will just, people will just steal.
Regardless of who I vote for.
Yeah. You know, I think us throwing in a towel is only going to make the problems we want to escape worse.
Yeah.
Because if I'm in public office and a lot of people don't care about how I'm performing in that public office, I'll just chill and go on holidays.
And then just rinse and repeat my manifesto.
Exactly.
Next election cycle.
And there's AI now. Rinsing and repeating, that's just a split second done. So, look, It is annoying to vote someone in public office there, and they do the complete opposite. And that's not something that only happens in Namibia. I mean, Trump ran on making the Epstein files public, and then he realized that his name appears in the files more than Jesus' name appears in the Bible. Then he decided not to make the whole thing public. But he
yeah, that Trump.
Yeah, look. So now that means look, politics can become very demoralizing at times. So when you find out that you are more like exhausted, you have to ask yourself one question. If you throw in a towel, how is that going to help?
Yeah.
Because if you throw in a towel, look, if you keep pushing, a lot of people are most likely to tag along. Mm. But if you throw in a towel, and a lot of people throw in a towel,
They see you do it,
and they also follow suit. Like, okay, now, you know what, you're right, what's the point? Mm-hmm. You know what's gonna happen in public office? I'm gonna become a politician. I'm like, you know what, just chop the money. No one is gonna notice because no one is looking.
Yeah.
I think that is the significance of public society, civil society.
But that's if systems don't work basically anymore. Meaning, mm-hmm. We forget to have, I say forget to have, active emphasis on forget to have an ECN anymore, then sure, yes. Because the importance of ECN, Helmut, is also about if there is a need to establish new constituencies as well.
Yeah.
Remember the demarcation and delimitation commissions
that
some presidents have to establish, which would be an ad hoc commission in most cases. Those guys play a pivotal role specifically when there's a population increase, like what we realized with the 2023 census.
Mm-hmm.
Namibians grew in numbers, and there were now new formations, or I say new formations of what seems like a collection of households, and then the question is interrogated: should new constituencies be established, or new regions be established? Or should there be a move and a shake and a situation of a line on a map to either left or right? And then, you know what's the worst part?
Yeah.
I now have to throw some of our colleagues under the bus. Franz and Abigail's people that decided to go and have demonstrations about moving the line further westwards into Kavango East. The regional border.
Yeah.
Move the regional border further into Kavango East. The commission was to go and assess certain particular things.
Yeah.
They're going to have a demonstration about moving a line.
What was the commission there for?
The commission was there to assess.
Yeah.
Whether on, if from the engagement that I saw when President Mbumba met them.
Yeah.
The commission, their main job technically was to go and understand. Mm-hmm. Did certain urban settlements grow?
Yeah.
Were new ones created?
Mm-hmm.
Did population, which is technically stems from the census report,
mm-hmm.
did people go and settle somewhere where it now looks like there's a lot more people there mm-hmm. than what previously was recorded?
Yeah.
What needs to be done?
Yeah.
That's now where you saw Governor Sinimbo's address, State of the Region address last year, besides the watermelon juice reference.
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite. Up,
where she highlighted that on the... in the plans, in the pipeline, are new village councils to be established. It was like three or four
mm-hmm.
that she mentioned. So that is basically what happens. Establishing new urban settlements where people just went and settled. When that happens, obviously you now have to, as the government, bring services like a clinic, like a police station, like a post office, like asking these SOEs to come and do certain particular investments in those new constituencies.
Yeah.
That's basically what the Delimitation and Demarcation Commission does.
Yeah.
Or they go and ask, or they see specifically people moved out of one constituency into another. Should we shift that constituency to this region? Or take it from this region and put it in this region? Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which technically does speak to moving a line.
So it happens every time. It's happening is determined by the change in population size.
Population dynamics.
Okay.
They didn't say it so as much, yeah, but that's what they were referring to when they met the president. But before we continue, guys, we take a quick ad break through a live read. Velvice University, for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs. Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6. Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5. Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6. Bachelor of Social Work Honours. Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours. Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8. Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8. Master of Public Health and the Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Velvice University, where everyone is an achiever. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But they do that after an election. And the election that they had to do this after is a presidential election. Because he met them before he had to hand over to the new incoming president, that being President Nandi Ndaitwa. He met the Delimitation Demarcation Commission after that. That is the aim that these guys do. They look at population dynamics and did people move? Were there push and pull factors in terms of urban to rural or rural to urban migration?
Yeah.
And that's it. Not Franz and Abigail's people showing up for demonstrating, move the line there into Kavango East. Give us more of that for our region. What? Who's going to listen to you?
Franz and wifey, that's Dwight. Now, look.
you guys know where I'll be tomorrow morning, here at the office.
But yeah. Now, when was that? 2024 Afrobarometer report on Namibians express confidence in elections, but a weakening trust in the Electoral Commission.
Yeah.
This was published on the 27th, on the 27th of November. Now, so you have, some kind of trust issues popping up, but that's not unheard of in the world of politics.
Yeah.
As long as we just talk them out instead of going full Sudan. But you see, the thing is, the level of miscommunication that comes with either OPEC, aka not the oil, quote unquote cartel, according to Western countries.
Mm.
This is opaque as in the lack of transparency. The lack of transparency leaves a lot of room for rumors and misinformation.
Mm.
So someone will have to share information openly, like your public official, for example. Which then hold this, stakeholder engagements, and you have your consultations, which then provides a lot of content for yours truly, the media, and then that information is shared with the general public.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you have, this is basically a supply chain of information. So if there's a breakdown of communication somewhere here, or there's a part where the information is not going through, you are going to have a problem, which is why I pointed out earlier that, you have to know what is going on in your country for you to know two things, what to complain about and who to complain to.
If no one knows who your councillor is, how much?
You remember this other event where the Minister of Finance, that was the former Minister of Finance,
It was also a civil society.
It was a civil society engagement where he was asked a question that should have been directed to the Minister of Gender.
Yeah.
So he also had to explain to them that, it's either the Minister of Gender, the Minister of Home Affairs. I think that wonderful lady's answer. And look, I like people that show up to events and ask questions like this because these events is where the right people to answer your questions are.
Mm.
They will provide for you, it's either they answer your question directly if they are from that particular ministry or that directorate, that SOE or private sector. Or they will just do what the former minister of finance did. I can help you with that question. Now, the lady was asking why a lot of, these facilities that house a lot of people that are vulnerable in terms of, especially those ones that are sort of like trying to escape domestic abuse.
Yeah,
especially women. Like the facilities, the public facilities that are supposed to house them and protect them, a lot of them remained closed for a better half, if not the whole year. Now, the question that the lady wanted to know was, why? Is it a lack of funding? And if it's a lack of funding, why are they not prioritized? Now, his answer was, the Ministry of Finance just dispenses this money. Now, what these ministries prioritize in terms of investing this money into, the Ministry of Finance does not have authorities over that. These ministries decide which particular project or initiative to finance using the money that they get from the Ministry of Finance. So, it was a good question, which was asked at the right time because she showed up to that event. And now, when I look at the statistics from Afrobarometer, that young people, the youth basically from 18 to 35, we don't show up to public engagements a lot. But then when it comes to protesting, we are protesting more than people that show up to public engagements. My question is, do we know what we are protesting about? David, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's a very good conversation, especially when you speak about the responsibilities of citizens, especially to the other arm of the state, because civil society, media, they are also part of the fourth estate. But looking into that context is that nobody should run away from accountability. Mm-hmm. Because most of the things that we see, especially regarding civil society organizations, is that criticism go directly to government. Mm-hmm. But if you also have a space of civil society organizations that is not organized, that mm-hmm. they are not well coordinated,
yeah.
you also have a problem. When things are not going well in the country, when you have high rate of unemployment, and many other things. People must also look at civil society to say, civil society organization, apart from holding government accountable,
mm-hmm.
what other things are you doing? You mentioned a very important thing about people asking the wrong questions
mm-hmm.
or they don't show up to public engagement. If there was voter apathy, for example, in 2024, do you really think you should just blame ECN for not educating people? We must also look at civil society organization and we have to say, you guys, there are also points where you are disorganized. It's only that by nature, you were supposed to be an institution that is holding others accountable.
Yeah.
But if you are not organized, if you are not well coordinated, then you become problematic. You have best civil society organization in Namibia,
yeah.
but you also have worse. Yeah, that's why the point of conversation that we should drive into is that if we are really serious about our country, everybody must be able to answer. To say you're a civil society organization, you've been getting money from outside the country,
mm-hmm.
where are your statement? What impact did you make? Even if it's just education, was it really impactful?
Mm-hmm.
When you have a lot of problems in Namibia, you must not only look at situation as civil society. You have those that appear by the situation. but just to contribute to what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have to contribute. So you have to show the progress that you have made in terms of the operations that you have conducted, like information dissemination, for example. Like, this is how much education or information we have disseminated on this particular topic or for this particular year.
Indeed, and why are you saying you are providing content when you are not be able to show that content? You know, one must just take time. You know the aspect of when the Financial Intelligence Act was being reviewed,
mm-hmm.
when FIC was looking at strengthening of these financial loopholes. One of the aspects was looking at civil society organization, especially those who get money from outside. But it's also something that says a lot about where Namibia is, where we have been. Yeah. But I'm good. Where Namibia is, where we have been, and also what are some of the things that we need to do, especially when we want to move forward. That's why when I speak about accountability,
mm-hmm.
we must all account. Let me give you a very interesting story. a lot of people will be angry with me, but I don't really care because it's the truth.
I hope you go to the gym to defend yourself.
No. There've been one umbrella body of civil society. I did a bit of research about this.
Yeah.
That is, it's called the NANGOF. This was supposed to be an umbrella body where everybody has to be involved, to be attached to when you have problems.
David, we can only see your hand. Shift.
Just a little bit closer.
But you don't need to see me. If you can hear me, it's fine.
Yeah, we, the fans also want to see you.
There you go.
Okay, looking at that context, that
at least we can now see half of your face. But go on.
Yeah, looking at that context, that institution has been operational.
Yeah.
Post the independence of Namibia, where civil society was a bit active.
Yeah.
But let me ask you a question. You know what divided these people? It's nothing other than finance. It's nothing other than resources. When Namibia was upgraded to upper middle income economy, it was supposed to be a celebration, but it became a fight in a society.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, because they said, no, we are no more receiving money. Were you receiving money because you're supposed to receive money, or money was supposed to be used to solve those problems? That is how, that's where you have to understand that the purpose of an institution can only be defined looking at the time that has passed.
Just
after Namibia, I think World Bank rated Namibia as a upper middle income country. That is 2009.
Yeah.
Then after Namibia was upgraded, then international donors are saying, no, we need to cut because we are moving. Then people were crying, no, the money is not coming. Then we start having fights now in civil society organization. But progress, where there is progress, there is progress. There are really those who are doing very well. There are those who are in the middle, and there are also those who are situational. And the danger of civil society, to people do not speak about these things to say, yes, you have a right to exist, but are you serving the interest of the Namibian people?
Yeah.
Because most of them, you can be human right based, but you need to be Namibian based first, because civil society means that you are at a grassroots level to solve community problems. And you are not a saint. You must be called to order. If there is there are some money that are lost within certain civil society, they must come and account.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, people just look at the private sector. We look at the guys at NAMCO and the Fishco. But the smaller guys can also become the bigger guys. You know what is very interesting, what I have seen is that most of the people in the civil society space are, and I'm saying this with much respect, some of
that's
them
how they are about to be insulted.
So some of them, they have been in politics, and then they realized to say, it's not really fitting, I cannot make that impact. Then they decided to go to civil society space. Some of them, you have faith-based institution.
This is a red tape motivated, or?
Yeah, not necessarily, because you always find, by nature, the society, there's already stratas within the society by nature to say, if you're not a religious person, maybe you are a religious and a political person, or maybe you are just somebody who loves working on the ground, or you are a retired, you want to give advisory. And all these things. But most of these people that you find in civil society organization, they have experience.
Yeah.
Some of them, they have good profile too. The question is that in civil society organization, not to divert from the general debate that you guys have already started, but in civil society organizations in Namibia.
We don't debate, David. You know that.
You know we don't debate.
Are they saving really the interests of the Namibian people? And also the issue of coordination. When you are saying, you are not coordinating with a public institution. It's like, say, no, you are in a family. Helmut and Dwight are not talking. Now the question is, who is not talking to who? Is
it really the government? Why are they not talking?
No, who is not talking to who? Is it really the government that's not coming to civil society? Or civil society think they needed their space?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the failure of Namibia should fall on our hands, on our shoulders, all of us.
Yeah.
Because the question that will be asked to say, after 20 years, what were you doing, Chief? What were you doing when you were working at Eagle FM? Were you just talking for the sake of talking, or were you educating people? Were you dividing people, or were you bring them together? That's why civil society should not run away. I don't like people running away, but they are the only one who are giving, point when others are failing. Let's that all be part of, you know, the whole cake. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the part of the part of the, you know, the inclusivity part in a way that our government is structured is some, especially in relation to civil society organization.
Yeah.
You know, the point that was made in the discussion, Dwight, that you know, civil society organizations have a representative in the public space, you know, that they have a space in the National Planning Commission. Yeah. That's something that I want to know more about. Like, what's a, like,
well, from, remember last year, David, I think you also remember last year, they got, civil society got another new boost in funding from the EU.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, last week's discussion from the APRM discussion was that, Mr. Uru Dempers highlighted he didn't understand why the EU basically stopped funding NANGOF, that thing that you mentioned, because that was the umbrella organization. Now, the umbrella approach is being channeled through National Planning Commission.
Mm-hmm.
With the unveiling, obviously, last year with that, what's it, 70, what is it? The funding the over the 3 years, 76 million Namibian dollars. The funding that the whole civil society landscape gets.
Yeah.
Now, it's done in partnership. The funder and informs National Planning Commission they're going to help civil society in Namibia through the national through the knowledge or the awareness of the NPC.
Yeah.
Now, when you look at this the dimension, and I asked this question last year, and I asked them, why is the National Planning Commission's people here? I mean, if you're a faith-based CSO, you are responding to a particular need in your community.
Yeah.
At that stage, your local politician doesn't care about the need you are responding to. They don't care. They will probably show up and try to do something and do an event and participate in one. But it's not their brainchild. It's not their initiative. It's not
there to give a speech.
Or to show for their electorate. I also care for the community. Look, guys, we have to be honest now.
Just to show face.
Local councillors are there for their bellies. Let's be honest.
Is there anyone that's not really?
Let's be honest. Local councillors are there. To think that a local councillor is benevolent.
No, not all of them. Let's put it that way because not really a matter of saying you are getting in trouble, eh? But just to say. not to get into trouble to say local councillors are there for their berries. Yes, it has been shown. But if you generalize, somebody can come and stand up and say, "You are not crediting me from what I'm doing." It is the same question that you say. You want to tell me that you don't have good politicians in Namibia? Just a general question.
Yeah.
We do have good politicians. It's controversial. It's the same thing to say you still have good politicians in Namibia. Yeah. You still have good police officers. You still have
That one is no. The police officers are questionable, but
you still have good citizens.
Oh, come on, not all of them.
And you still have genuine entrepreneur. That is a debate. it's a debate of another day. Look, it's a debate of another day.
Yeah.
But if you want to understand the society very well, where you have good, you also have bad. Yeah. It's only that maybe majority of them, they are there for the snacks. But you really have those
who... Nice. They're there for the buffet.
Yeah. But you really have still people with good intention. Because if you discredit the political impact in development, I think that's going to be very problematic. It will create a void. Just like if your son say, "Daddy, I want to become a politician one day." What are you going to tell that person? Are you not going to say, "Yes, it's good, but these are things that you need to understand"?
No, just congratulate son. You picked the right career.
Yeah. How can I help you get there?
Yeah.
When it comes to tenderpreneurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if you are to look at that, David, from a entrepreneur perspective, one thing that you'll see is that, the categories of projects in their execution.
Yeah.
You have those ones that are complete, you have those ones that are completed, you have those ones that are abandoned.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I would say every time that I talk about entrepreneurs, I always give a shout out to those that complete their projects. Because there are those that do.
Yeah.
And there are those that abandon their project. Yeah. And those that abandon their projects. Now, that is where we have a legal loophole. And this is what the Prime Minister was talking about was that last week.
Mm.
When it was basically, in most, if not all print medias that he was talking about, ways of punishing individuals that are abandoning projects. And and I kept saying this is something that IPPR have been singing since 2023 because I still have their procurement tracker on my computer where they're talking about we have a giant loophole in our public procurement act. The way things are right now as we have the procurement act is that there are only ways to punish a jurisdiction entity. There are no ways to punish an individual running that particular juristic entity. And as a result, you have now a lot of people that are using, exploiting that they will register a company with BIPA and then just, apply for a bid, get the tender, chop the money. And when that entity is gray listed or blacklisted from applying for tenders anymore, they're just going to register another one and apply because, they individually cannot be associated with their juristic entity because these are two different, these are two different persons that thanks to, to limited liability.
Yeah.
That is common knowledge.
Mm.
But every time that we talk about, this project has been completed or this number of houses have been, are being given to individuals that did not have houses applied for this initiative and now they're being, someone constructed those houses.
Yeah.
Someone won a bid for those houses.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just that for the most part, stories like take for example like a company being awarded a tender and completing that. Mm. There's not a lot of stories that to talk about that. We only talk a lot when someone abandons a project because there is a lot to talk about.
Yeah. And maybe just to end into that because if we are not finding where the problem is, because there was a time I was asking to say who is sabotaging. There is this word people like to say, no, this guy is sabotaging. Who is counter revolutionary when it comes to when it comes to the development of Namibia? Where is the problem?
You'll even hear that in meetings.
Yeah.
I would hear it in corporate meetings.
Yeah,
counter what?
We are not governments fighting each other in the same company.
Yeah, and the other thing that we also need to look at is that sometimes you can have a project, you are given a lot of money to complete that project, but I don't want to say situation that are beyond your control. Where the money is coming from is where the problem is. But what we see is a white elephant project that is associated with your company's name.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the question should always be to say, if things are not moving, if currently as we are speaking, Trust Namib does not have more than two, is it two or three locomotives? Somebody should correct me because I did not see one for a very long time moving.
No, they are moving. It's the line runs here.
But in terms of number, they decreased so much that you cannot even predict. The question is that who is to be held accountable for that? If a project is standing, is it somebody who is releasing the money?
Mm-hmm.
Are the reports within the regulation, or is it really that the guy?
You also have to ask: is someone collecting the money?
Yeah, is it really that you just a white elephant project? Because if we are not going there to find out who the culprit is, then things are not going to work. Because
let's use your Transnamib example. If anyone from Transnamib is listening, we're just using you as an example, possibly.
Yeah.
Let's say it's a Transnamib thing now.
Yeah.
And let's say there is no performance management, meaning you show up at 8, your boss checks that you are there at 8, you leave at 5, your boss sees that you leave at 5.
Yeah.
We don't want government employee mentality.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's healthy to say that there are some SOEs in Namibia that have a laissez-faire approach to you know, to the Employment Act.
Yeah.
Now, when you see realities like that, where in the private economy, where the private sector is, they are strict on performance.
Mm. Yeah.
If we say you're here by 8, yeah, we can tolerate 5 past 8. We can tolerate 10 past 8. Mm. We can't tolerate 10 past, we can't tolerate 8:30.
10 to 9.
Or 9:30 even.
Yeah.
I kid you not, guys.
Yeah.
In the Public Service Act, we all know someone who works in the government, ne?
Mm.
Ask that person to go read the Public Service Act and to come and tell you what's the latest they can come. It'll be 10 a.m. I kid you not. It'll be 10 a.m. And you know what's the worst part?
Yeah.
The performance parameter, Helmut, is also of such a notion of, it's not a question of did you do work or not. It's just your boss must see, David, that you are here.
Mm-hmm.
Not your boss must see you work. Your boss must just see Helmut is sitting behind his desk, and Helmut could be doing this with his phone. I'm sorry for the. But literally, this is the demo. What the person is doing. The person is just moving the phone left from the left hand to the right hand the whole time.
And also fulfilling of KPI. The other thing is,
do they have KPIs?
No. They might have. They are those with KPI, but there's also a problem. There's one thing which I have seen. It was lessons on organizational strategic management.
Mm.
To say, let me say this new app on artificial intelligence to fasten work and all these things, but you are a training officer.
Yeah.
You are still saying, within this year, I was supposed to complete 4 trainings.
Yeah.
You don't care with the content, whether they are relevant,
or
whether you find the better trainer or not. They just want to say, no, this is what things are. But you don't even need to go and look at how are these going to impact the organization. That's why in most cases, you know, everybody must be looked at. Because if you have the head of that institution that is not really looking down to make sure that everybody understands, because things were supposed to be like this. If I find a security guard at guarding Namra, for example, just to give an example, that guard must know, apart from protecting that institution, they must know what is that Namra is doing, what is that they are striving to do. That was what was supposed to be. If you find a driver of National Planning Commission, just to give an example, you must not know the whole strategic plan, but you must know where the direction is. You must know that...
But the if you come on, is NDB6. So
no, it's not.
Do you think a driver would care? All he cares is I've got my salary.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be like that, to say know it at your level so that you can have fast implementation. That's why even next year, unless something
changes,
something changes really, we are still going to speak about coordination, monitoring and evaluation.
Mm.
Now the voice just become louder. The action are still not there. I was reading the international trade report, international trade statistics for May. Believe me, you can take that international trade report. The numbers may have increased, but the format of our economy is still the same. We have almost everybody is in China now. I'm just giving an example. If you just take
look, man, we're just 3 million, so that's almost everybody.
if you just take that international trade statistic report, then you go back to 7 years ago, you might find 80% of the similarities, to say the structure is still the same. We are still exporting raw. We are still dominated by 2 countries, China and SA. And nothing much has changed.
Maybe the EU coming along.
Yeah, the EU may be coming along. Yeah. But the voice become louder to say, no, diversification. Add value to our products. We cannot sell raw materials anymore, but we are selling 199% of our minerals, which are raw materials. Maybe to say, yes, we have good intention, but when
David, we have been having good intentions since 1990.
No. To help David, this scenario also. It's literally what's that historian that I follow on YouTube, Rutger, but he's a Dutchman. He's the guy that went and said on that one British show,
when they held one or other climate thing before COVID in London, then Greta Thunberg showed up and said,
"How dare
stop
you?
Using oil." And then he said, then he was interviewed on the show, but they were part of a panel discussion, and he went and said, "Listen, Greta is unrealistic. Now she's calling for you must now stop using petrol in your car tomorrow."
Yeah.
The problem, like what David is highlighting, is basically how do we phase into the industrial thing? Now, the only clear-cut thing we see is the green industries. Because green hydrogen is not mining. Green hydrogen is actually manufacturing. But what do you need in manufacturing? A bunch of engineers, a bunch of chemists, a bunch of technicians. Now, someone went and told, for example, I did this exercise not last year.
Yeah,
it was last year. This exercise was a lady that's from the Karasburg area, outside Karasburg area, but there's a communal land area there, known as SADCO. But someone there in the Karas region, a politician, was telling people who didn't finish high school, they didn't even have grade 10, brah. People who barely finished primary school, people who don't have any skills, they didn't go to university, who can barely read and write English. Someone was telling them as a election campaign messaging strategy that they're going to have jobs in green hydrogen.
It's a cleaner or security.
That's the thing. No one knows as what role.
And also maybe just...
Maybe it's a protester when they are corrupt.
And Hyphen is still busy with the skills mapping exercise.
Yeah.
Where you are supposed to go and log on. Now the person doesn't know about the skills mapping.
And really, if you want to take our citizen very seriously, let's go beyond the numbers. Let's go beyond what is being spoken. To say I established this project and it created 100 jobs for young people. Then we clap hands. Then we start toasting.
Yeah.
We did not go and ask ourselves to say, if you are saying you created 100 jobs, what kind of jobs did you create? If somebody was...
So you have to compare it with the qualifications available.
No, not really to not say the qualifications, just the qualities of job, the time frame. Somebody can create 2 weeks employment for you, and then they say, we created 200 jobs. Those are the records.
And that's part of the...
For young people.
Yeah.
Then that phase, we must go beyond that to say, what kind of job did you create? Are these long-term? Are they skilled jobs or non-skilled jobs?
Are they short? Are they... What's the other thing? It's that thing that some of the civil society guys are calling for, the decent jobs.
Yeah.
Decent jobs speak to having a decent earnings. It's dignified. No, it's dignified. But it speaks something in that decent jobs, decent earnings dimension.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing there. I actually want to drop this bombshell in our discussion. Well, have you guys ever heard of development in Europe or in United States? The word development, except for software, AI, and the IT based spheres, you guys won't hear that they've got development internally.
No, I think no. I think it's a good question.
Isn't that because we just assume that all the countries are developed?
To them,
they are a developed country, so they have all the infrastructure. True. Everything is top notch.
Yeah,
but the thing is, after building infrastructure, maintenance is needed. So
true, and you need the tenderpreneurs.
Yeah,
because you need to give continuous procurement contracts.
Yeah.
Now, one of the accusations, obviously, that the IPPR guys have highlighted is that. With that procurement act is most a world class act for a developing country.
Yeah. Ours.
Ours is a world class act
for
developing country.
You know what? Namibians, we are very good people. You know.
Please elaborate.
No, I'm saying we are very good people because we love our country and we are very good at marketing.
Yeah.
You know, I love listening to the Minister of Energy and Industry, Mines and Energy. I was listening to his speech when he was telling investor in China to say we have the best, we have peace, best policies, we are preferable in SADC region, which is actually true.
Which all
When you speak about the best procurement in the world, There is nothing in Namibia that was not the best. We have the best constitution.
We're not in the world.
No, no, yeah. We have the best constitution, and we are very good at marketing that. Mm. But the question is that, I always have this thing in mind to say, how do people look at us when they come to our houses? How do they look at us?
Oh, how do they look at us when they drive through informal settlements?
Mm. How do they look at us when we are saying we have a lot of opportunities?
No, I think we are also proud of that. Remember this other time when we took, Cuban representatives to Havana.
Oh.
To a place named after their city.
Imagine somebody who assisted you to get independence.
Very proud of us.
Sacrificed all his people. Then you named that area city.
Don't people know what symbolism is?
No, look, man.
How do you take someone that comes from a country who has a capital city that is older than Namibia?
Yeah.
Havana is an old city.
Yeah.
That the Spanish built.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? How do you take someone to an undeveloped thing named after my capital city? And then you come and show me that this is what we named. This is how much we love you.
Because we have a good relationship, bilateral relationship.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the insult is just on another level. We love gaslighting.
The point about informal settlements that is stuck in my head is the one that you once said, calling a place an informal settlement shows a lack of planning on your part.
Mm-hmm. Having it is the basically saying, I don't know how to plan. Deal with urban and rural.
Yeah, I can't keep up with, with the expansion of my own.
Guys, there's just one controversy I think that the South African minister in the presidency has made today.
Oh, Ramakgoba.
No. The lady, what's her name?
Oh, it's the lady. Ramakgoba is Mr. Energy Minister in the presidency.
Yeah.
Hang on a second. There's Ramaphosa and there's something else.
Ramakgoba. No, he's the energy minister. No, I'm talking about the minister and the presidency.
In the presidency.
She was speaking about these properties that these foreigners left in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
But what she said is that, look, if they are left in the informal sector, they are already illegal. The shark is not, it's not a property if you have a business in that.
So that means all those South Africans are forfeited.
All those things are forfeited.
All the structures are illegal.
Yeah, illegal. That's what he said. Then I asked myself, am I not hearing this properly? Or is the point where she's coming from that I'm not understanding? Or just to justify that everything is forfeited?
No, it's what she said. Everything. Those guys, even protesting there, they forfeited basically where they live.
Yeah, but, it's very tough out there. But to come back to the topic of civil society organization, I think the government must also be very serious about assisting civil society organization, because if we are check and balance, we are not enemies. And there is this thing. Even it's a civil society organization, it's activist, it's the media. People think that we are operating in a different dimension.
Yeah.
But we all want the same thing.
Yeah.
That's why the question of who is coming to who? Who is not talking to who? If we are not talking, is it me who is not talking to you? Or you not talking to me? And what can we do? That's why civil society, some of the people, they need capacity building.
I think part of the biggest problem is... I'm gonna call us naive because we don't want to have problems. Disney mentality.
Yeah.
We just want to have, we have to get along with everyone. Look, disputes are going to pop up, whether it's between activist media, civil society, public officials. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of how do we, when there's friction, how do we solve this? Because whether we like it or not, it's going to come up.
Indeed.
Yeah. Now, take for example the media, and activists. To some degree, they work together in terms of, covering their match and match.
Yeah.
But, outside of that.
The founder is a former media person.
Yeah, exactly. Like the thing is,
she's this close to being a Radio Rwanda. She's a former radio presenter.
The thing is, we have to start dealing with the reality that there is no way we are all going to be 100% on the same page.
No, that one is a fact.
That is, that's in a fantasy world. That's in an ideal world. Yeah. But we don't live in an ideal world. We live in the real world. Family members have frictions.
Yeah.
Couples have frictions. Have you seen the divorce statistics?
Yeah.
And now you have...
divorce. Go look at their families.
Yeah, Mjolo statistics. I don't want to get in there. Now... Look, the thing is, there is going to be friction. That's the reason why we have all these kinds of legislations of, they are there to ensure that, when there is a disagreement, how do we settle it?
Yeah.
So in other words, we know we are always going to have issues in a way that we, you know, in ways that we solve problems.
Yeah,
like if you are a public official and I'm a civil society and we even argue over dumb things like you are from a different political party.
Yeah.
I mean, we are from different political parties. I mean, dumb things like that.
Yeah.
But,
well, it was showcased yesterday.
Look,
David explained to me that was it you, David, or was it Francina that explained the political parties? The guys that walked out yesterday because of incorrect attire. I mean, how do political parties that you voted for not know how to dress properly for the National Assembly?
Now,
I get your
that's
opinion.
A politics 101.
That's not politics. That's wasting people's time.
Money.
I wanted to come to your point because even when I stated it, I stated it in the way that we must understand differences.
Yeah.
And you also understand at the level of enemies. You are correct to indicate that when it comes to wherever you have human beings, there is always an aspect of
disputes.
Conflict is already there by existence. There is already conflict and disputes.
Mm.
But if that conflict and disputes graduate to the level where people are no more able to sit on one table to say, no, those guys are just civil society organizations or those are just politicians. And that is what we do. Even if I bring you an authentic politician, people say, there is even saying, no, there's nobody who is authentic, which is actually wrong. Even if I bring you somebody with good leadership skills, good characters, good understanding of policies, and also influence, you will not be able to see that person. That is what I wanted to say.
Yeah.
We may fight in terms of different ideas, but at what level are we meeting each other?
Yeah.
What's the common goal?
That is you put it in the right in the private school English.
Seriously.
That's exactly what I wanted to say. To say, what is the common goal? Where are we meeting? To say, if the president of the country say NDP6, civil society organization must say, how can we assist the nation to get there?
Yeah.
Media through giving correct information, but ask yourself a question to say, how do we assist to reach there? Because we want to reach into that destination.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The same thing with all the politicians to say, whether you are from party A, B, or C, or D, the country is moving to that direction. The basic debate does not matter.
Yeah.
Are you debating toward that common goal?
Yeah.
Or you are just debating for politicking? It's the same thing, even the taxi drivers must know. That's why... that's why somebody was a environmental expert was indicating to say countries that made it, they have a common national agenda and also culture. If you go to Rwanda, everybody knows, even the small kid knows that if you are retiring, something's going to happen to you. But in Namibia, you even see the person who was supposed to correct things, putting them down and all these things. People are not accountable to anything. You look in the street, you see respect is there, but not really to say at the national level.
Mm.
Yeah, somebody was comparing Rwanda, comparing China, to say apart from industries, then you also have these common cultures that we are all sharing. But something that we are getting there, but very, very, very slowly.
The issue probably with that, with those two examples for them, like China, is also a European example.
Mm.
Because the Europeans don't understand that we've, like Namibia, we've almost got diversity.
Yeah.
But they've got homogeneity.
Yeah,
The same language, the same dominant or major cultural group in that country. Let's say France, it's just a bunch of French-speaking guys.
Yeah.
And then it goes from there. What happened, for example, in Spain just after, was it after COVID or just before COVID?
Mm.
Remember the Basque, when Barcelona, the province of what's their province's name? The province where Barcelona is based in.
Yeah.
Where they wanted to break away. Remember the secessionists? The guys that ran to Brussels.
Yeah, I think I remember. Yeah.
Just before COVID. So what happened there was they wanted to host a referendum because the EU allows for, what's that thing's name? Self-determination, and they support. And then when the when these Spanish guys try to do it now, not the Basques, they're not Basques, they are Catalans, yeah, the province of Catalonia.
Catalonians.
When they wanted to do it now through Barcelona, because the guy was making accusations to the head of the prime minister in Madrid, then they sent in the army and the police. And the banks of Spain withdrew out of the province. They sent in those guys, went into exile into Belgium. Then things normalized. The discussion from what you heard from, you know, for the media that carried their messaging was the majority group of Spain doesn't actually reflect like minorities in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Now you would find it similar in Italy. Yeah. Italy has the southern Italians, which are the guys from the island of Sicily and the island from Sardinia. You'll find it in, okay, we've got an ad break creeping up on us. You'll find it even like in England, like in the UK, Northern Ireland, Wales, and Scotland. So that's a this dimension that also becomes problematic in terms of when we start talking about one culture, homogeneity in its scenario.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250mm jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its staff.
Welcome back. So, Catalonia.
Yeah. So, and then obviously in the Chinese case has been the, you know, very popularized scenario of the Uyghur people, which the Westerners were now trying to make it like this. And that's Western media. They were trying to make it now this massive, what you call it, trying to blow it out of proportion.
That's the most ironic thing I've ever heard, because they don't like Muslims in the Middle East, but they like Uyghur Muslims halfway across the planet.
Across the world, specifically in China. So you can also see this propaganda as a bit of an issue.
That's propaganda 101, if you really like Muslims, you start with these ones here.
Yeah, you get to a place like Australia, where up until 2019 or 2020, the last prime minister, one of the two prime ministers away, had to apologize to the Aborigine Australians for them being they were almost a similar label at during this from the 80s, 60s, 70s that way. Aborigines were listed like the sun were listed here in Namibia like part of the fauna and flora, like wild animals, because they are prehistoric civilizations. Yeah, bro.
Jesus.
So scenarios like that, where you've got a dominant culture, but you've got these smaller cultures that exist also in the same cluster, they are now starting to become like discussions at the civil society level also. And anyway, I'm going tomorrow to one thing about indigenous languages and the environment situation.
Yeah.
So that discussion will anyway pop up once again.
Yeah.
If you get to Russia,
mm-hmm.
the first idea you have about Russia is you think Russia is predominantly a Caucasian country.
Yeah.
But then you go find out Russia has got 5 or 6 provinces. Yeah. They're not even known as provinces. They're known as republics. They're a federation of republics.
Yeah.
5 or 6 republics that are Muslim majority. Then you've got the Mongol guys, which are that city I love talking about. What's his name?
Is it Yakutsk?
Yakutsk. Mm. And then you head eastwards, they are all just Asian, you know, look Asian.
No, Russia was everything, that region.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
So some of the concerns that we also have to look at, for example, is that civil society, that point you mentioned about where the funding comes from.
Yeah.
One of the biggest funders is obviously, what's that guy that is problematic that Jai Shankar doesn't like? George Soros.
Yeah.
Because Soros uses NGOs.
No, NGOs have...
CSOs, he uses them.
No, NGOs have acquired a negative reputation in terms of being used as vehicles of destabilization. Yeah. I think ever since the 1960s and 70s.
Yeah,
but they are... Yeah, it's like... It's basically one of those institutions that started off very well, and then they got infiltrated by bad actors, and now, you know... They is basically tarnishing their reputation because there are those that have basically allowed themselves to be used in destabilizing. I mean, the Russia-Ukraine war before 2022 has a lot of NGO activities that were also basically implicated into the beginning of that
war. And those NGOs came from the US, the UK, and
exactly.
And the accusation is that a lot of them had a whole bunch of NATO intelligence operatives.
Yeah.
I mean, I even had to watch a TV show where the whole premise is based upon this guy.
Look at the history of DRC. A lot of NGOs that were building dams there.
Dams?
People realize that people were just exploring.
Yeah, look, organizations.
And they are not innocent. That's one thing. They are not innocent, and they are also they should also not be crucified. It's just a matter of how do you manage.
Yeah, it's a gray area. Yeah,
yeah, how do you manage that space, and also how do you protect your country's security? Because once somebody has influence, once somebody has more money than you, once somebody is serving the interest of somebody who is from outside, then 1% your interest. Because I always ask myself a question.
And even the decision-making for those interests.
I always ask myself a question to say, why do we have a lot of problems in Namibia, but we are receiving a lot of money in Namibia? But when you look at... where those money are going.
Mm.
They are directed somewhere that we are not going. Why can't we ask the question to say, no, we understand you, but those are not our priorities. Mm. Our priority, we just want to eat. We just want basic, proper housing. But you are coming and fund, honestly, Namibia is the most peaceful country. You are coming and fund a human right defined from outside rather than,
looking at the Namibian needs.
That is really something that put a lot of Namibians down to say, money is coming into the country, but is the money really looking at our interest?
Yeah.
Because if money is coming into the country and is looking at...
Or even if it's based on evidence or research or data.
Yeah.
Those are true, yeah.
Because it's also a question that we can also ask to say, you are my developmental partner for 36 years, but what are some of the tangible evidence? You brought a lot of money in this country, but can you really point out to the impact that you bring to me? If you have to answer that, there are really those who are doing something, but there are really those who spend a lot of money in transforming the society in a way that that is not how we started as a country. That's why Ibrahim Traore is saying, no, we are crossing down. We are putting a case.
Now, Operation Precise is about to take place there. Look, the thing is, the reason why I appreciate what we do in Namibia, like what we are doing right now, is, it's something that is very, can get annoying and exhausting at times, sitting to just talk about these things. But the thing is, one thing you don't understand is that if we don't talk about it, it's going to pile up into Mali. So if you don't talk about it, it's not going to generate enough attention for someone to act. And as a result of that, all these things will just pile up into until you reach a point where you have a civil war on your hands. And that's how it starts. So take for example, what's going on in the Sahel region.
Yeah.
I like to look at things from how did we get here? How did we get here? If you look at the March and March in South Africa, for example. Whether the March and March guys are doing a good thing or a bad thing, they are exploiting a weakness it's a structural weakness in the government that they are exploiting.
Yeah.
How did we get to that? Who created that environment? When you ask that question, it will take you back straight to the public officials, your presidents, your VIPs. And now those are the guys that basically created this insecurity the SAPS has been known to be one of the most corrupt organizations in the country. They are easily infiltrated, and a lot of them have been infiltrated. A lot of high profile officials have been linked to, or more like accused to have ties with gang members. Things like that creates insecurity in the society. So when they start saying, whether they are right or not, when they start pointing all the fingers to immigrants as a problem, it's very difficult to correct them, because for you as a public official, you know, as a member of the police, it was your job to make sure that the insecurity is not there in the first place.
And remember that the jihadists are just on top of Cabo Delgado. They did not go anywhere.
No, they're still there.
They just arrested them.
Now, the jihadists.
And remember that when you have resources, you have loopholes, then there are those who exploit chaos.
Exactly.
That's why peace is very, is necessary, especially in a developing economies, because once you have chaos, what's happening in South Africa? I was talking to Penny today to say what's happening now in South Africa is that we are going to feel that too in the next 3 months, because if you remove just 15,000 people, or now it's 30,000 that are reported to have gone to their countries, that already shake the economy at a local level and also across, because technically those are people that were holding on one way or the other Namibian economy. Somebody was supposed to pick the cargoes. Somebody was supposed to pick, the trucks that are coming to Namibia. Yeah. There's already a gap there. If the cleaner did not come to work, if the housekeeper did not come to work, how is a South African person going to succeed in that industrialized jobs that can also benefit us one way or the other? But one thing that you have mentioned correctly is the aspect of loopholes, to say, who else is going to exploit that loopholes? Because you have an opening, kids are dancing there and there is no control. Next thing, a bulldog will pass by that. It's going to be very problematic.
Cause chaos.
Yeah.
Look, when it comes to exploitations of organizations, that is one of my favorite subjects. After I read Propaganda by Edward, it features a lot of stories coming out for Edward Bernays, but I think it was Noam Chomsky that wrote them. But Propaganda, that was Edward Bernays. The thing is, Edward Bernays is one person that is looked at as the father of public relations in the very same way that I think it's Sigmund Freud, who is also held with a high esteem in the field of psychology. And we have, the Grotius, who is the father of public international law. Now, if you look at, Edward Bernays was living in the time when the feminist movement was just coming up. And he found a very genius way to sell cigarettes using their movement. And he made a whole lot of money using them. Now, he just basically gathered a bunch of people, as you can imagine, who and told and gave them a cut from whatever money that he was going to make, and told them, well, now just promote smoking in public. You know what he called that? Torches of freedom. Women went on a smoking spree. Now, they didn't know that the more they smoked, the more they were buying these things, and the more the idiot was making money.
They did not come back.
So, they just went on smoking and smoking and smoking. Now,
and they never come back.
Now, look, when they talk about Edward Bernays being the father of public relations, I look back to the torches of freedom as an excellent PR campaign. Yeah. A lot of people fell for that crap. Yeah. They didn't know that. Now, actually, he could not have cared less about women's rights.
Indeed.
Yeah, he just looked at the organization and saw it as a vehicle for him to coordinate with cigarette making companies to sell more cigarettes and make a lot of money, and which he did. So every time you find yourself in an organization where you are representing something or marching for something, whatever it is that you are doing, ask yourself one question. One thing you have to understand is that the chances of you being used are really high.
Yeah, if you don't, there is a saying to say if you don't know where the menu is, you may be part of the menu too.
What is Helmut's other sentence? Helmut, help us with that adage.
My favorite being the Chinese one.
If you are not in the
If you are not the knife or the chopping board, you are the fish on the chopping board,
my friend. And there's also the other thing to say, but I don't know if this, but it's proven somehow to say, in politics, if you don't know who is being played, the chances are very high that it might be you. But I think it's just a matter of you being aware to say, not really to say it's a general concept of everything, just for you to be aware to say when there is chaos, who is benefiting from this chaos? When there are challenges.
That question.
Yeah, who is benefiting from these challenges? When you have poverty in Namibia, who is making more money from the poverty and our ignorance too. Because there is always somebody who is benefiting from our ignorance.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why those are very big questions that we should continue asking to say, who is also benefiting from a disorganized civil society?
When your country is in chaos,
yeah,
who stands to benefit?
Indeed, those are the questions that we need to really look into.
Yeah, so, that's not really surprising. According to the good book, Judas found himself amongst the disciples.
Yeah.
When other disciples were seeing salvation, he was looked at Jesus. Yeah. Others looked at Jesus and saw salvation. Judas looked at Jesus and saw startup capital. Yeah.
Seed funding.
Seed funding for his, you know, for his latest project.
It's very tough because
you probably know that some people might never invite us to church events.
And also, guys, we have to wrap up before we say something that will literally lead us with us. No, look, I don't mind not being invited to church. I mind being invited to things like that has food, like funerals and weddings.
Yeah, but really, you can all see the same thing. But when it comes to interpretation,
yeah,
honestly, somebody see a person as just a friend. Another person see an investment. Another person see
a lover.
Another person see a startup capital. Another person see, you know, we can see. We
care all, that helps you care thing, for others. That's the basic mental health first aid course, free for NHP members. You'll learn how to spot early signs of mental or emotional distress in friends, family, or colleagues, and how to guide them to the right support before small struggles become bigger problems. Learn more and register for free at nhp.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.